Chicago Fraternal Order of Police President Dean Angelo, Southside community activist Rashana Baldwin, and Square Roots Festival headliner and Bloodshot recording artist Lydia Loveless. And now here's your host, a man who tastes like Chicago, Justin Kaufman.
So that's like sweat? Or like Robinson's ribs.
One of the two.
Welcome to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock tonight. We got a great program lined up here. Take it through the night, whether you're getting out of town for the weekend, maybe wrapping up Friday night, getting ready for a weekend here in Chicago. Or, like us, just kind of starting work. We're here for you. We got you. We're riding shotgun with you tonight on The Download. So much to talk about. Obviously, what happened in Dallas yesterday, we got to talk about that. And really, that's what this show's about. The ability to bring you sort of different points of view for all of us to get together and understand why people do certain things the way they do them, why we live a certain way. And why sometimes we don't see eye to eye, whether that be police force and minority communities, whether it be your neighbor across the way, what have you. We live in a very complex world, and sometimes, you know, we need help in understanding everybody else's points of view. So, you know, and that's, to me, much more interesting than puppeting back, you know, the same old talking points, acting like, you know, like I know it all. And like I'm going to tweet out. This is the problem with America. Let's go to war. Like I'm a congressman who owes a ton of money to his kids. We'll talk tonight with Dean Angelo. He's going to join us. He's the president of the Fraternal Order of Police, Chicago, Lodge 7. He will talk to us about relationships with the Chicago police and minority communities, but also about what Chicago police officers are doing this weekend to mentally prepare for work after what happened in Dallas, Texas. Also, Rashana Baldwin's going to join us. She's a community activist from Inglewood. She does great stuff. She's a co-founder of Rage Residents. It's such a great Resident Association of Greater Inglewood. She also hosts a radio show called Good in Inglewood. Her attempt is to essentially tell great positive stories about her neighborhood and not let the news sort of spin violence and other things that are happening in her neighborhood as what happens all the time in Inglewood. She also has a problem with what we see all the time on Twitter and we see on social media is this idea that, you know, why are people protesting police shootings when they won't protest the violence here in Chicago? And you see this all the time, right? This is, I even brought it up a couple days ago when we're talking about the 4-year-old who was shot on the porch. And she brings it up that, you know, at some point or another, that's a false narrative, that it's apples and oranges, that there already has been. And essentially what that shows is ignorance and in some cases racism. So we'll talk to her about what she means by that. She did a big piece in DNA Info about it, and she'll be on the show tonight. I love her. She'll be here. Rashana Baldwin. Coming up at 8 o'clock on the big table. Excited about this. Lydia Loveless is going to be here. Lydia Loveless is headlining the Square Roots Festival up in Lincoln Square this weekend. She's great alt-country singer-songwriter, country punk. She's got a new record out called Real. Her single Longer is tearing it up. Everyone's really excited about this record. She's going to be here, and she's going to perform live. So if you can't make it out to the Square Roots Festival in Lincoln Square, The Download's gotcha. We gotcha. Also coming up tonight, our resident philosopher Al Jeany is back. He's going to talk to us about why it is that we don't take vacation. It's true. Studies say that we will leave vacation days on the table. We're afraid for reasons. You know, maybe we don't want to give up our space because we're afraid someone's going to take it if we take these days off. Or maybe we're just too overworked and we just forget about it. Or maybe we just don't think that we need it. So we're just giving vacation days back. And as we hit the dog days of summer here in Chicago, we'll talk to him about the philosophy behind that and why vacation is important, even if you think it's not. Al Jeany will be here in the 9 o'clock hour. And coming up at 10 o'clock, there's one segment that's going to bring the world together. It's the frying pan. Steve Gadlin, local entrepreneur, innovator, inventor. He will be here. He won on Shark Tank with his business idea, iwantodrawacatforyou.com, and he comes on our program Friday nights at 10 o'clock regularly to come up with new inventions to pitch to Mark Cuban. But before he brings them to Cuban, he brings them here to workshop. Tonight could be a big night for us because as a community, we should all come together to support positive things like Steve Gadlin. And so maybe that's part of what we're talking about. Maybe the negativity, so much negativity in our world. Even at 10 o'clock on Friday night, so much negativity directed at Steve when no one likes his corn on the cob invention or his electric banana peeler invention. Or the tattoo that talks, that sings your favorite song, the tattoon. 312-981-7200. All that's coming up tonight on The Download. I'm excited. Are you excited, Pete?
Always.
Yeah, Lydia Lovelace is amazing. I mean, to have her on the program, she's blowing up right now.
Yeah.
Everyone is very excited about this record. And I was reading a bunch of stuff on Rolling Stone, Spin. She just put out her video for the song Longer.
Mm-hmm.
It's really good stuff.
Can't wait.
Right? There you go.
It's a Friday for you.
There you go. And are you going to take all your vacation this year?
I never take all my vacation.
No, you.
I always leave something on the table.
Al's going to be mad at you.
Don't
you? Professor Genie. I do too. I do too, yeah.
I've been around for so long, I get 48 weeks of vacation.
That's the problem with me too. When I got the job here at WGN, I said, I don't really want money. I just want 16 weeks of vacation. So now I just can't take it. That's the problem. What a beautiful night here, man. Wow. Chicago is going crazy right now. There's a lot of people on Michigan Avenue.
I'm very excited. Not about the people, Justin, but a ice cream truck that is parked right on Michigan Avenue.
Where? I don't see it.
It's like right in that little curb.
Oh, nice. You're going to try to get out there?
That's like where the Lyft driver goes when I'm in front of the building. He sits there for 10 minutes,
there,
and I try to find him.
We should do like we did at the Taste of Des Plaines or at the auto show, and we should send you out with a microphone on a Michigan Avenue to get some ice cream for us tonight.
I'll do it. Oh, he's peeling away. He was sitting there for a while. Nobody was coming up to him.
All right, you know
too
what?
Too busy down
we'll
here.
You can interview the guy who's in silver paint instead. Or the guy who sets up his boombox to Ariana Grande and dances all interpretive. That's my favorite guy.
My favorite guy is the guy, and it's so random and I love it, is the guy in the gorilla costume.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen him?
I have, yeah.
He lip syncs to Sexual Healing by Marvin Gaye. So like, there's like a track of Marvin Gaye playing Sexual Healing, and he's lip syncing. The gorilla is lip syncing to Marvin Gaye.
Oh, man.
It's so fun.
That is good. That's good.
That's a genius idea.
It is.
Speaking of Steve Gadlin.
Yeah,
guys,
maybe
he's just raking it in over there.
Maybe we can get those two to collaborate.
The gorilla.
Lip sync gorilla and Steve Gadlin to come up with something really fresh, really new. Oh, man, I got to tell you, I had the worst thing happen to me. This is the worst thing that happens to me today of all days.
Uh-huh.
I wasn't even going to talk about it, but my air conditioner tuckered out.
Ooh.
I know. And there were rumors that this weekend was going to be like 90 degrees. It's got moved back a couple days. So I was really worried. When I got home last night, I was like, you got to be kidding me. Like, it just wouldn't go on.
Yeah. How can you sleep? You can't sleep in that.
No. And that was it was a difficult night.
Mm-hmm.
But it was one night and it was 75 degrees. Not that big of a deal. I find myself turning to like 19-year-old Justin. It's like, who needs air conditioning? I need a tall boy and a fan, right? That's how you live in a third-floor Chicago apartment. You know, you sweat it out.
Do you change your room at all? Do you go to a lower level? Do you go near a window?
It was okay. Last night was good. We just opened the window. So
yeah.
But it's supposed to be bad. But the I learned so much today from Four Seasons. The guy came out, and it was awesome. I feel like I now could have a career in air conditioning and heating.
You know the old saying, Justin, you can fix an air conditioner, or no, it's like you can teach a man to fix an air conditioner and he can be cool all the time, or he can fix it himself, something like that.
Yeah, no, I get it.
A little wordy.
He taught me all about where the air is supposed to be blowing. I didn't know. I'm such an idiot. I'm such a guy who's been a renter my entire life. I don't know anything about air conditioners or central air.
No.
He explained the physics of it to me, that you know, it's not pushing air in. It's taking hot air out.
Mm-hmm.
That's what the unit does upstairs. So it's not, that's what the everything's for. So I always thought it was just pumping air in.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I'm a doofus. I have no idea what I'm talking about. But this guy, William, was great. He explained it all to me. He explained how the works, what cord did what. He plugged in, showed me the pressure. I blew a capacitor.
Really? There's such a thing as a capacitor.
Yep. I asked him if I could keep it so I could see if I could travel through time. Doom. Noonan's drum.
I think it's over here. There you go.
Essentially, mine is weight. I also learned that my central air unit is essentially illegal.
Powerful?
No, exactly. It's tricked out. So, no, at some point they made a change in the way that we do air conditioned units or central air units on your building, you know? Like the technology change. It's almost like catalytic converters. And the one that I have, they're phasing out in 3 years' time that you're not going to be able to use those anymore. And I'm like, oh, okay. Didn't get that memo. But it's on my central air unit is on its last leg, so I have to buy a new one.
Oh,
yeah,
that sucks.
They were kind of like, hey, do you want to buy one now? And I'm like, no, I don't. I want to replace that capacitor. That's what I need to do. And they're like, well, it's probably going to break again. And I'm like, and I am a gambling man. I am the guy. I play by the rules, and the rules say at 16 you hit. And right now my central air unit is at 16. But hey, you hit it, man. I might get a 4, I might get a 5 out of that thing. And hey, that's another year.
You're good.
I'm good. But I didn't know that a lot of the problem with the unit will be the fan belt or the fan will actually get damaged over time, the wear from the snow, from the rain, from all the different stuff. So the actual blades that are inside of your unit, they're supposed to push the air up, and over time your airflow will change and it'll actually go to the side. But if it goes all the way to like a 90 degree angle where it's coming out from the side, it's pretty much dead. So I can tell you when he got it back working and it was flowing 90 degree angle to the side, I was like, okay, I see what you mean. This is not working right. So I have a problem, but I can't thank those guys enough. William and Four Seasons for coming out and doing it. They did it like that. They were there in the morning. Totally helpful.
So when he's talking, I'm bad with service people coming over. I'm a guy that'll just say, "All right, you good here? I'm gonna go be by myself over here and look at my phone." You know, I don't hover around.
I hover. I go up there and I do small talk. So yeah, so what's up with the capacitor? I try my best to act like, just like everything I do in my life, I try to act like I know what I'm doing. I'm also the guy that thinks it's like I'm super cool to the guy, so I'm like, you don't need to put those booties on your feet, man. I don't care. My wife cares. I don't care. I'm cool, man. He's like, no, I'll put them on. I'm like, yeah, not for me. I don't care if you walk on carpet. I'm a man. Man don't care about what dirt you put on my carpet.
That's so true.
It's so true. He's going right to like, let me get it. I'm like, nah, man, no, we're cool. You want a beer while you do this? Like, cool, we're cool. No, he was really, but I mean, he even went through like filter stuff, unit stuff.
Wow.
All sorts. I felt like it was like an hour class. And I was even like, I was critiquing my neighbors. So I would go over to the other spot on the deck and I'd be like, this guy's got it wrong. Look at this. This is what you're talking about, right? This is right here. It can't be gated in. He's like, exactly. And I'm like, yes. Where are we going next? Lyle? I'm in. Let's go. So anyway, thanks to Four Seasons. That's all. But I got it fixed for now.
Great.
Until next week.
Yeah. Roll the dice.
Roll the dice. Sir, would you like to hit? Would you like to stay? Not only am I going to hit, but I'm going to split, and I'm going to put a lot of chips down on this one. So that's what I'm doing. All right, so coming up tonight, news, weather, and traffic with Susan Burke is Susan tonight for Rob Martyr. Production by Pete Zimmerman. I'm Justin Kaufman. This here is The Download, a show about Chicago starring those who know it well. We'll take a break. We'll do the carryout. After that, Dean Angelo is going to join us. Stay with us. All right, let's get the show on the road. It's The Download here on 720 WGN. It's time for the carryout. Our nightly segment where I read the news so you don't have to.
Here today's top stories. Last night, five officers were killed by a lone gunman in Dallas, Texas. Lots of confusion over the gunman, suspects. The media ran with whatever image and images they could find. It was a lot. And it truly was a maddening experience to be a news consumer. So what did that mean? It meant everyone just went to social media, which, too much. Facebook, Twitter, Snapchat, Instagram, Friendster, for God's sake. Everyone wants to talk at the exact same time. Here's a pro tip. If you start your Facebook status with "I have no words" and then proceed to print up 400 of them, you're not doing it right. And when we could use these tools to help understand each other and maybe find some sort of common ground or a solution, no, we just reinforce our silo. We strengthen the walls to keep our friends closer, and those we don't understand, we block. Bye, Felicia. Come on. I stand for the police officers in Dallas, Texas. I also stand for the men who were killed in Baton Rouge and St. Paul. I stand for Orlando. I stand for San Bernardino, and I stand for Sandy Hook. I also stand for Chicago. I stand for all of it, because I can't stand it anymore. Man, I should have put this on Facebook. Former Illinois Congressman Joe Walsh took to Twitter right after the shootings to threaten the president, saying, "This is now war. Watch out, Obama. Real America's coming after you." Many are calling for the Secret Service to arrest Walsh for threatening the president of the United States, but to be fair, Walsh was just quoting a Ted Nugent song. Joe Walsh. Good to see he's crawled out from that rotting log. Doesn't he still owe a ton of money to his kids? Let's just bring that back up. You owe a ton of money to your kids. Moving on tonight, Donald Trump is getting geared up to accept the presidential nomination at the Republican National Convention less than 2 weeks from today. No word on who he'll choose for VP, but I kid you not, the rhetoric is heating up that the ideal candidate would be, wait for it, his daughter Ivanka. Yep. It's been floated by officials, the campaign, Trump himself, and Trump's family, including her brother, who started by saying, "She's hot. So, yeah, she'd be great." Come on. Could you imagine if Donald Trump picked his daughter? She does turn 35 just before the election, so, I mean, it could be interesting and hot, I guess. The Washington Post said that Trump had choice words for an absent Illinois Senator, Mark Kirk. Upon his visit to D.C. yesterday, Trump reportedly said that Kirk is being, quote, very hurtful, and suggested he needed to step in line. Now, there's your VP candidate, Trump Kirk 2016, a foot in every mouth. The mayor of South Suburban Monee is being accused of assault again. Mayor Joe Farquhar allegedly broke the jaw of the Little League umpire after the umpire gave a kid on the opposing team an extra strike. Really? This isn't the first time the mayor's been involved in alleged violence either, as he's accused of punching a dog. I don't even have a joke here. What are you doing? Yeah, I guess you know what they say about Monee politics. If you can't keep up, punch a dog. Come on. In weather tonight, it's nice. It's summer. Nice weekend. Gonna get hot on Monday. Gonna get hot on Tuesday. Might get hot on Wednesday. We'll see about Thursday. Maybe Friday. In sports, for as much as Chicago wrote off the White Sox during their May-June slide, will fans turn on this Cubs team, which has now lost 6 of 7, limping into the All-Star break? Nah. They still have a stupid lead in the NL Central, but that could change with a 3-game set with the Pirates. Arrieta goes tonight, so that's good. And better news, Madison Bumgarner is pitching on Sunday, so he's not going to be available for the All-Star game. So Arrieta's in line to start, and he will face Chris Sale. It's got to be Chris Sale, right? He hopes to wow the home crowd tonight and going for his 15th win of the season. The Sox take on the Braves, or who I like to call the waiver wire Sox, with A.J. Pierzynski, Tyler Flowers, and Gordon Beckham all on that squad. Ugh. Gross. A.J. I like. The other guys, got to win this series, right? The new Bulls point guard Rajon Rondo said all the right pieces are in place for the Bulls next season and that this is Jimmy Butler's team. Can't wait for that to play out. I've got Miss First Three-Pointer in the When Will Wade and Rondo Question Jimmy Butler's Leadership Pool. You? Yeah. You want to go with free throw? Okay, go with free throw. Notre Dame and Michigan have renewed their football rivalry. They stopped it last year, but they're back on track to kick off the season in 2018. Notre Dame coach Brian Kelly tweeted that since its first game, Coach Jim Harbaugh may want to break out the khaki shorts. Coach humor. If I were Harbaugh, I would tweet back a middle finger emoji, you know, for recruiting. You know, the kids love emojis. What else? Wimbledon's on, golf is on. I'm sure there's some sort of horse golf as well. And finally tonight, Wendy's is reporting a data breach. So if you bought a junior bacon cheeseburger with a credit card in the last 3 years, shame on you. Really, you deserve this. That's the carryout for July 8th, 2016. Hey, it's Fish Fry Friday. We cooked it on Wednesday, but the alliteration, it's just too good to pass up.
Coming up, the president of the Chicago FOP, Dean Angelo, talked to him about policing and relationships with the community. Also, Rashana Baldwin's here. Talked to her about black-on-black crime and the false narrative that's being provided. It's a download here on 720 WGN. Stay with us. Welcome back to the download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Last night's terrible events in Dallas, Texas have reverberated throughout the country and the world, as many have sent their condolences to the families of the fallen police officers and almost all have denounced the violence. Closer to home, Chicago police officers are on alert as protests continue tonight. Joining me on the line is Dean Angelo Sr. He's the president of the Fraternal Order of Police, Chicago Lodge Number 7. Mr. Angelo, thanks for being here.
You're welcome.
First, your reactions to what we saw last night in Dallas.
Shock, disbelief, frustration, aggravation, you know, we ran the whole gamut.
Yeah. Last night, the Chicago police issued an all-call, which is like an alert to police officers, about what happened in Dallas. How are local officers preparing for tonight with protests back scheduled for tonight and also for the weekend?
You know, I'm not privy to yet, actually. I'm not privy to what the department's intentions are going to be. Mm-hmm. I would imagine that they would be heightened. I would imagine that there would be extra people assigned, and hopefully people will be deployed in a different manner as they might have been deployed, before yesterday.
When we talk about the mentality of a police officer, obviously what you see in happening in other cities, especially something like as bad as what we saw in Dallas, Texas, that has to get into police officers' mental state as they prepare for a weekend of work.
Well, you know, we had another officer that just passed away that was shot earlier in Missouri. We had another officer that was just shot in Georgia. So, you know, our officers are very aware of what's going on across the country. Also, what they've been experiencing here for the last many months. You know, nothing is routine. Nothing was ever routine, but there's a heightened sense of concern right now for not only the police officers, but the spouses that they've kissed goodbye, the kids they hugged before they left, their families, parents of police officers all have a new level of concern and angst that they might not have had yesterday.
Well, you've talked about it recently that department morale is low and that there needs to be more done to support officers who are policing, especially in tough neighborhoods. When you think about that, which we've heard from you in the last couple of weeks and from the union, this weekend, I would consider that you would say that even more.
Well, you know, there's I mentioned it on the 28th when we were at the City Club about a deafening silence of support that's out there or that's not out there. The elected officials, the people that represent the communities that are most in need should be welcoming and encouraging more police involvement, as opposed to questioning tactics and looking at incidents that have nothing to do with Chicago when it comes to supporting police officers. And, you know, yesterday I was at the city council and some of the, the looks or the language and the rhetoric that came from some questions and some, you know, elected officials there was just, it was questionable to say the least.
Well, I mean, where do you think that comes from? I mean, obviously, as there's pressure from communities to have their elected officials be able to hold people accountable, especially when we see things happen where there are incidences with police and communities. Where do you think that comes from where the rhetoric is changing and make it more questionable in your estimation?
Well, you know, there's been an anti-police platform that some politicals are running on, not only in Chicago, but, you know, statewide and even nationally. It's almost as if you are looking for support from your constituents or the movement that's become commonplace so that it doesn't behoove your future political career to support police officers. Mm-hmm. So although I might get a handshake in the back room, or I might get a wink or a phone call in public, it's, please don't have the FOP endorse me, because it might not look good to my constituents. But I got your guys' back, and I'm supportive of what police officers do, but they just can't do it publicly. And that's not uncommon for me to hear.
The conversation before Dallas was about policing in minority communities, about what happened in Baton Rouge, and also what we saw in video in the suburbs of St. Paul. As we look for solutions, as everybody comes together, as president of the police union, what can you tell us that could better understand the relationship between police and minority communities and why there's so much tension?
Well, you know, you look at that accountability task force report that comes out, and one of the first things they talk about is systemic racism. Based on a four-month data grab by the ACLU from a while back, where they looked at a disparaging number, or they claimed that a disparaging number of people of color have been stopped by the Chicago police. But they don't take into consideration, and I put this to Lori Lightfoot, they don't take into consideration the areas those stops came from and the amount of officers that are assigned or regularly work in those areas. And I use the 11th District at Kedzie and Harrison as an example. Geographically, it's not a very big district. It's less than half of the size of the 16th District on the far northwest side. The 11th District has 444 police officers assigned there. 16 has 196. So 11th District leads just about in every category, or the categories that I did my study on, which were gun arrests, narcotic arrests, and homicides. So the types of crime determines the manpower deployment.
Okay.
So you have more than twice the amount of police officers assigned there on a regular basis that work in that district. And because they lead in guns, gangs, and murders, the department also deploys the gun teams, the gang teams, the narcotic teams, and the saturation teams, thereby more than doubling the amount of police officers assigned there. And when I brought this to the attention of Lori Lightfoot, and I mentioned, did you take that into consideration, that the area is being saturated with police officers because of the type of crime and the deployment process, the calls for service that the department utilizes to assign officers there? And that wasn't taken into consideration. I would claim that you should expect increased contact of people of color from those communities where you have this over-deployment of not only beat personnel, but outside unit personnel being assigned there. It should be expected that the area, which is 99% African-American, would come back with, on that report, a higher level of police contact, thereby giving a skewed number about this racist claim when you look at just a numeric value.
I will grant the idea that in that accountability, that's a very strong word to say that the Chicago mm-hmm. Police Department is racist in any form, and that was in the accountability study. But what do you think it is about the relationship between the black community and police that every time that there is an incident somewhere in the country that it sparks this kind of protest? What does it say about the relationship between policing minority communities?
Well, you know what? It's that type of rhetoric that preceded a lot of these demonstrations, and it's not only here, it's elsewhere. It's also something I talked about before when we were at the club, City Club, was, you know, the media's perceptions and some of the media's misreports on circumstances that occurred, and not utilizing the entire incident or the event, just the result of the event. The lack of compliance in some of the headline cases, that's a common denominator. The lack of compliance on the individuals that are involved with the police. Keep your hands on the wheel, drop your gun, don't come for my gun, drop your knife, put your hands behind your back. If there's compliance, the incident's over. It doesn't escalate, and it doesn't turn into a headline. The person's in handcuffs, are still alive, and they're going to have their day in court. But we don't get into that discussion. We look at the result because that's all that's shared. we don't look into the history or the type of circumstances surrounding the event as much as we get into and deal with the result. And when we jump to dealing and focusing on just the result, people are looking for a response, and they're looking for it quickly. You know, social media is a contributing factor. The media itself is a contributing factor. A history of, you know, police involvement and high crime in those areas, sure, you're going to have more contact with police, and it probably is going to be considered negative on the part of the citizen because they might get stopped more often, again, because there's more police officers in that area. The policeman never knows who's behind that wheel until they find out. You know who we are. We're easily identified. We used to have a document that came out of the union that said what to do when stopped by the police, whether you're driving or whether you're on the street. And I think that's time for that document to go back out. One side was written in English, the other side in Spanish. Keep your hands on the wheel. It's a lawful order. We have the ability to give people lawful orders by our office. You know, stop, get your hands out of your pocket. You want to make sure you're safe as I speak to you or as I have my initial contact with you. Put your hands behind your back if you're going to jail, if you're being arrested. You know, that's a lawful request. It's a lawful order. And lack of compliance in these circumstances is a lot of, you know, or it has to be considered in what happens when these situations get out of hand.
Well, we look forward to continuing the conversation with you, Mr. Angelo. We'd love to have you back on the program to talk about policing solutions and moving forward. Dean Angelo Sr. is the president of the Fraternal Order of Police, Chicago Lodge Number 7. Thanks so much for taking some time out tonight. We appreciate it. It's Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. One of the storylines that always bubbles up is why protests will pop up across the country and here in Chicago after a police shooting, but not when there's a weekend like last weekend in Chicago violence. Inevitably, you hear social media rants. They'll say something like, why protest in Ferguson or Baton Rouge or St. Paul when you should be protesting the violence right here in Chicago? Do you not care about your own community? It's a loud counter-argument to Black Lives Matters, usually started by white people. But according to journalist Rashana Baldwin, comparing the two storylines are like apples and oranges. And not only that, it's a bit ignorant. Rashana Baldwin has spent the last few years trying to showcase positive stories in Chicago's Inglewood neighborhood. Inglewood is just one of the South Side neighborhoods that has seen its share of gun violence. Baldwin co-founded RAGE, Resident Association of Greater Inglewood, and she hosts a show called Good in Inglewood. And she's my guest tonight. Rashana Baldwin, good to see you.
Good afternoon. Good evening. How are you?
I'm good. Good. So there was a big DNA Info article yesterday about the idea of black-on-black crime. This concept that, and we hear it all the time, and we see it on days like today, where when protests take to the streets because of a police shooting, inevitably people will say, well, why aren't there protests for what's happening in Chicago every single day? Why is that a bad thing? Why is that a false comparison?
Because we have been, you know, protesting or, you know, coming out in numbers and really trying to stop the so-called, if they will, black-on-black violence. But in the article I mentioned, let's really address the bigger picture and why is that happening? Why is it black-on-black violence? Why are we having those people rise up in anger because of the lack of funding,
resources,
the disparities, the resources. What happens when you take so many things in our community out of our community and our communities don't look like the communities that are thriving when you come to the suburbs or downtown and you wonder why Inglewood and the residents are upset or angry or hurt or, you know, just, you know, is up in arms because of these issues. We don't have those same resources to live on a day-to-day basis and live comfortably like individuals who live north of Roosevelt Street.
Well, I mean, it's an interesting argument, and you hear it a lot. But I try to think back to covering Chicago in different capacities over the last 20 years, and I do feel like people have protested against the violence.
Yeah.
There's a certain point where people just either the media is not going down to cover those protests or the protests are just not being heard.
they're not being heard. And that's what I do to get the word out on what residents like myself who live in these communities are doing. We are addressing the issues. We are at the tables. We are marching in the streets. We are in the boardrooms. We are in the radio airways. We are writing articles. We are talking to our elected officials. You know, they want to hear from their constituents. So we are doing our due diligence. But you know, if you see me on social media, I push back, like, cover that. Show the side of residents working together to make change in the community. And that doesn't get covered. And I often say, because it's not sexy enough. We know what sells on the newspaper. We know what sells on the radio airwaves. But they don't want to see that picture. They want to see the disparity. They want to see, you know, the violence, the mom crying and falling out in the street. They don't show the residents at tables really strategically trying to come up with solutions. You don't show residents like myself pushing back against the elected officials. Like, we got to do something.
And even I would even go further than that and say the regular life in Inglewood, you know,
absolutely.
Not every single block and every single place has gun violence at every single moment. But sometimes it feels like it's characterized that way.
It is. Cause like, again, I know what sells. I've worked in a newsroom. I know what sells. I know what's sexier. I know what, and at 2 o'clock afternoon editorial meeting, what we want to cover, what we're going to send our reporters out to. And I've been the one who pushed back. They cover this. We got to change those conversations. It takes more people who look like you, who looks like the people who are downtown, to really change those conversations. Like, no, let's cover this. Let's take it a step further. And me being a journalist, you know, I was really, you know, tactful and skillful in knowing how to push back and like, nope, here I am. I'm not going to go away. Cover this. Show the good side. Show us working together. Show us engaged. Don't keep showing the same story over and over again. Like, you're giving the people who are committing these crimes the attention, the airwaves, the spotlight to show them, like, look, I made the news. Look at what we're doing.
Right. And it's funny because last week we heard a little bit about that on the 4th of July, that the police chief came out on Sunday and said, look what we did. We had a great 4th of July. And then overnight into Monday that it spiked. And there was some concern of whether or not the criminals saw that on TV and said, well, we're going to do something about that.
You keep giving them a platform. You keep giving those individuals the opportunity to beat their chest and say, look, I made the 9 o'clock news. Look, I made the 10 p.m. news. Look at that. And they rap about it. And they talk about it. And they, you know, they go on social media and brag about it. You don't see what people are doing to really create change, solution, and peace in the communities. Show more of the residents out protesting. Show more of the residents out on the streets praying. Show more of the individuals out trying to create solutions and change in the community. Show them out really having these rallies and these talks and conversations, and show families working together, show the programs that's working in the community.
You know, I asked this question to Mr. Angelo, the president of the FOP, the same concept. You know, why is it that when there is a police shooting that we see a video that comes up, that you will see protests come up in Chicago where there wasn't, this happened in Baton Rouge or St. Paul, or you'll see something in, you know, today even in Los Angeles or New York or other places? Why is it that people come out to protest when there's a police shooting in other places? What does that say about the relationship between the police and communities?
Why do they come out and protest? Because they think it's wrong. It's horrific. I mean, I don't think they just come out to protest when that happens. They come out and protest for various occasions. But because social media is so big and everyone has a camera phone and everyone has access to social media, they want to shame the individuals and the cops who are doing this. It's like, now it's coming to a head. Like, we want to put it on blast. It's been happening for so long in our communities. Now that technology is so advanced, now we can capture all these wrongdoings that the cops have been doing for decades. And you know, if you covered, you know, news and politics here in Chicago back then, 20 years ago, did we have social media that we can expose so much crime that was happening? That's what they're doing. They upraged and they're upset. And you have millennials like myself who's like, this is how we're going to protest. This is how we're going to react to it.
Rashana Baldwin is the co-founder of Rage, resident association of Greater Inglewood. She's also the host of a radio show called Good in Inglewood. We'll continue our conversation. And we'll take a break for the news. We'll come back with Rashana. Stay with us. It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. In studio with me, Rashana Baldwin. She is a journalist from Inglewood, and she is trying to bring positive stories to the Southside neighborhood. She co-founded Rage, resident association of Greater Inglewood, and she hosts a radio show called Good in Inglewood. Rashana, one of the things we were talking about before was this notion of black-on-black crime and whether or not, you know, you hear and you see so many people say, you know what, why are you protesting out in about a police shooting and you won't protest what's happening in your neighborhood, what's happening with black-on-black crime? And that's the kind of conceit, that's the premise of what we're talking about. And it, we were just talking in the break, and it, there's a little bit, you talked a little bit about, I guess the word's accountability.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
That's the idea that's missing in this, that the black community is somewhat worried that police officers, there's no accountability.
There is accountability in the communities that I come from that look like me. We do the black on black crime. Again, I go back to look at institutionalized racism. Why is it happening? What happens when you don't have certain resources in your community? So to say that we're not doing anything when black on black crime is absolutely ridiculous. And I said before, it's ignorant. We have been protesting. We have been complaining. Oftentimes our, you know, requests and demands go on deaf ears. So the next action to get someone to wake up and pay attention to us is take it to the streets, is get the attention to the media, is to go out and pray, is to go out and have these rallies, do something, as opposed to, oh, just respect the police. Oh, just listen to the police. When you have individuals and cops that come into our community that don't look like us, and they're overzealous, and they're, you know, taking that authority a step further, too hard, too aggressive, because they're fearful of us. They're fearful of the minorities, of the individuals who don't look like them. So to say that we are not, you know, being accountable to ourselves and what happens in our neighborhoods is just absolutely ignorant and ridiculous. We do take it a step further. We are in outrage. We are upset. We are, you know, offended. And we do our best to make people hear us and, you know, really try to get our neighborhoods to, you know, be peaceful. That's why those protests, that's why these peace rallies are happening.
And if a gang member shoots another gang member, there's a police case, and a case in which when the gang member is caught, the assailant, they're given punishment.
Yes.
And that's a big part of this, because what the protests that are happening and what people don't understand when they make that comparison is a lot of times, and we've seen this and the stats back this up, this is not opinion, that a lot of times when police officers are involved in shootings, and there is a protest to say that maybe, you know, they overstepped their boundaries.
Absolutely.
Rarely does the justice system back that up.
Absolutely. What happens when, as we see now, so many cops have, you know, committed murders and crimes? What happens to them? How do they get punished? Oh, they get slapped on the wrist. They get paid administrative leave. What happens to when individuals, black on black crime happens or whatever? They get life. But when a cop commits a crime, oh, you get a paid leave. You get 90-day suspension with paid leave. You get to go return back to your nice, comfortable home and still collect your pension and still collect money from the taxpayers. So who's holding the cops accountable when they're committing these vicious crimes and these murders? No one. So that's why you see these protests is even more aggressive and upset and pissed off. And what is going on? How are we holding these cops accountable? Something needs to change. That's why you see so many countless protests left and right. Like, that needs to change, because now you can't even turn to the police to get assistance, to get help. You don't trust the police. That relationship is broken. So it's easy for someone looking from the outside of Inglewood, outside of the West Side, to say, just respect the police, just obey the police, just put your hands up in the air, just call the police when you see them out on the corner game banging. Really? What do you think happens when we do that? What do you think, even when they take it a step further, when I just said, oh, just snitch on him selling drugs. So what happens when I go snitch on a drug house next door? What happens to my family? Is this cop going to protect me every single day of the rest of his life? No, I can end up with a bullet in my head. So what are you doing to really end that situation and end that? What are you doing to really bring economic change in our community? What are you doing to bring resources in our community so this won't result into that? That's when I go back to the racism, the institutionalized racism that's been happening. This black on black crime is just not something that just happened overnight. It's a reason why that's happening. It's a reason our communities are set up to look like this on purpose. We are separate and divided on purpose.
You grew up in Inglewood.
I grew up in Inglewood.
Talk about the neighborhood. Tell, I mean, to WGN Radio, and there may not be a lot of people who've listened to WGN Radio who are living in the suburbs, myself included, that spent a lot of time in Inglewood. But all we hear about is the violence and what happens in the news. So what? Tell us about neighborhood. Where'd you grow up?
I grew up in So I grew up, I like to call it the Upper East Side of Inglewood. I grew up in Inglewood, lifelong Inglewoodian on Morgan Street. I'm not going to give the exact address.
That's okay, you don't have to.
I grew up in Inglewood. And me growing up in Inglewood, in the countless articles and interviews I talked about, I was like, you know, I didn't grow up the way the media has portrayed the community.
Well, how did you grow up?
Going to school, enjoying life, participating in every sports. I was into sports, played tennis, played basketball. I'm a vegan. When I tell individuals that, they're like, no, you're not. You're not from Inglewood. You're from Hyde Park? Where are you from? You're from downtown? So growing up in Inglewood was great for me. I mean, I was actively engaged in everything. School, sports, arts and cultures, African dance. My mom was really hands-on with her children, and she was a single mom, but she did what she did to keep us engaged into the community. She also was marching in 1960 when things were happening, so a lot of that has trickled down into mm-hmm. me to be consciously aware that I am an African-American woman growing up in Chicago on the South Side, and to pay attention to certain things and just be consciously aware of how I'm portrayed.
Have you seen an economic change in the neighborhood? Have you seen, from growing up in the 80s, I guess it would be, right?
Excuse me, I grew up in the 90s. I am a millennial growing up in the 80s?
Sorry, born in the late 80s, maybe, right?
Yes.
But talk about, have you seen in your lifetime a change in which the neighborhood has maybe been run down?
It's
is it similar?
Weird.
What is it?
It's trying to make, so right now what's happening in Inglewood currently, let's start currently. Presently, it's like this synergy going around. You know, all the development, the Whole Foods, mm-hmm. the 63rd and Halsted development, the new businesses that's coming. So me growing up, it wasn't any of that. We still had a lot of barber shops and beauty shops and churches. The economic development wasn't there. They were trying. This was before the new Kennedy King College was built in right. 2005. So it was still toward the end of the 80s. 63rd and Halsted had completely was like gone. That was like, you know, back in the day, the 1960s, 50s, when 63rd and Halsted was the biggest retail district, if you will, closer to downtown, second to downtown. And that had completely gone away, but they still had a few like little corner stores that wasn't really doing anything right. for the community. So me growing up then, it wasn't nothing.
What was there? I mean, what?
Corner stores.
When you say corner stores, like you're talking about liquor / convenience stores.
Convenience stores, a few mom and pop stores. It was a few mom and pop stores. It was nothing. It was nothing. So me saying that when you have nothing in your community, what are you supposed to do? When you can't leave your community, you have to leave your community to go somewhere else to shop for groceries or shop for quality clothing and food and education. What are you supposed to do?
Right.
So what happens when that community is robbed of those resources?
Or what's the impact, and also what's the awareness of your community or the value of it if you have to go somewhere else? Even your self-value, a feeling about where you live when you can't do the essential things in the neighborhood in which you live.
I can't shop in my neighborhood. I can't, have a great meal in my neighborhood. I can't go to the grocery store. I can't buy clothing in my neighborhood. I have to go downtown. I have to go to the suburbs. I have to go far west. And that's what I talk about, you take those resources and funding outside of our community, and the individuals wonder why there's violence. When you don't have quality food, if I haven't eaten all day and I'm at school and I'm acting crazy, I haven't eaten all day and I don't have access to food and medical, then what happens? So then you can't say a community, you guys should change, but put those resources back into our communities. Allow us to compete with other communities who are viable and thriving and sustainable.
Mm-hmm.
So now you see the shift. You said, what's economic now? It's shifting. It's more of a demand, more of the elected officials, if you will. We want our communities to look like
right, the Whole Foods.
The Whole
right,
Foods.
Right, right.
I mean, and that was, crazy to individuals like Whole Foods, we don't know. It's like, well, we cannot not have any. We cannot afford not to have a Whole Foods in our community. That's not going to, if you will, gentrification. It's going to take tens of thousands of middle class people to move to Inglewood before that happens.
You have been a spokesperson for the positive stories that are coming out of Inglewood.
Yeah.
There are negative stories. There are some blocks where there's a lot of gang activity. And that has shifted over the years. We've heard stories and tried to understand how gangs and gang warfare has changed. I mean, it's gone from the big gangs that sort of had territory to gang members on every block, protecting their block.
Yeah.
When I know it's great to talk about the positive things, but is there is there a future where the negative things can be eradicated? Is there a future in which you see some way that, whether it be within the community or forces from without, that we are going to shift the paradigm and stop the violence in places like Inglewood?
I would love the violence to stop all across the country, all across the world. Me talking about the positive is more so give us a fair balance. Absolutely, it's always going to be some issues or some instances where violence occurs, but I've always took the motto, let's show the positive side. Let's give it, show both. Give it a counter. Where is a counter? So me creating that Good in Inglewood, that Good in Inglewood radio show, because we don't have, news feeds pumping out the good, feel good news. Yeah, violence, it happens, it occurs, it exists, but it's not every single day. In communities like Inglewood, you can't paint the community as everyone in the Inglewood community creating violence. They try to take these numbers and everyone wants to report the statistics that lie. We know you can lie with numbers and statistics, but you can't sit there and paint a community of over 70,000 and say everyone in that community is creating crimes, and that's just not the case. When you look at it realistically speaking, more than half of the Inglewood community are law-abiding citizens. When you see violence, it's in those segregated, isolated areas where you're like, that individual wasn't even from the Inglewood community. They happened to come over here to visit, and that happened, that kicked off. So we need to see that. We need to see, let's address the root of the problem. Why is the violence happening? Don't keep talking about the exact same thing and not getting to the issue. Why did this happen? Why is it happening? Why is it continuing to happen? How do we address the issue, the root of the problem? So me countering that with the positivity is like, show a different side. Shame on you for not covering what's good in Inglewood. Shame on you for not actually getting to the root of the problem. And I even take it a step further and blast the individuals who come outside of the country, who come outside of the state and want to do all these beautiful documentaries.
And that's all great to talk about the positive stories about Inglewood. Do you at all hold other residents who may not be doing good for their community accountable?
You almost had me curse on air. Absolutely. What? Do I hold?
What can you do? Are you the kind of person who's going to charge into a couple guys hanging out in the corner and be like, go home?
I'm going to always use my common sense to address any issue. I live in the urban city known as Chicago, so I'm not going to address a bunch of guys on the street like, pull your pants up. But to my peers, to my residents, to my fellow Inglewoodians, like I told you earlier off air, I'm not an activist. I don't wake up saying, how can I change the community? I want to get involved. So if you could do something, whether it's in the boardroom, whether it's on the airwaves, whatever role you're in, what can you do to make a difference? I often say I'm a journalist, so it is my social responsibility to do something, to talk about it as a resident, as a Chicagoan, is my civic duty to be active. So what are you doing to do something differently that you haven't done yesterday or today? What are you doing to make a difference in your community? Like I said, whether it's, in a nonprofit sector, whether it's in corporate America, whether it's, on a basketball court, whether you're having those conversations, what are you doing to change the conversation, Justin Kaufman? What are you doing to change the conversation, neighbor? What are you doing to do something? I'm not going to expect you to do the exact same thing that I'm doing. I'm not going to expect you to get up and, just be aggressive, but I expect you to do something. Because if you don't, if you sit back and say nothing, then you are part of the problem. Mm-hmm. You can't continue to complain. And I take a step further to the individuals on the north side, in the suburbs. What are you doing to make a difference? What are you doing to change those conversations? Educate yourself on why this is happening before you make these wonderful, beautiful, lovely comments about what we are doing and how it's all our fault. But what have you done? What have you, because once it trickles down over across Roosevelt, now it becomes your problem. Now you're pissed off. So don't wait till it gets to that point. Won't you do something as well? I'm not never asking anyone to come save us, but how are you changing the conversation? How are you educating yourself?
We will continue the conversation. Rashana Baldwin is the co-founder of RAGE, Resident Association of Greater Inglewood. She also hosts a radio show called Good in Inglewood. You got to come back.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I would love to come back and continue this great conversation, because I know you have a lot of listeners who are like upset and pounding their chest like, what is she talking about?
No, we don't. The Download Nation is, I said at the beginning of the show, we're open to different points of view, and we want to hear from everybody. I mean, that's people are calling in and they want to be part of the conversation. That's a good thing. And we'll take some of those calls.
Absolutely.
Rashana Baldwin, thanks for being here.
No problem. Thank you.
It's a Download here on WGN Radio. Thanks for listening tonight, 720 WGN. A lot of great comments here tonight. I don't even know where to start. Most of the comments, but like 224 says, we need women like your guests to become police officers or politicians. There's a lot of people that are that question. I mean, there's some really good stuff. 616 has a really good 773-616. It's a really good comment. I want to know why the residents in Inglewood or West Side or anywhere else spend time protesting and marching and praying when that just doesn't work. You know what works? Calling the police and taking the police, talking to the police, and then backing off and letting the police do their jobs. Calling the police when someone is selling drugs or has a gun is great, but don't expect the police to clean up your block if they can't put their hands on the bad guys. Nobody with a gun or on probation or selling drugs will peacefully go to jail. But the same residents who call the police and stand there yelling at the police that they're too brutal. Also, the reason their neighborhood doesn't look like the North Side area is because we don't put up with the stuff that Inglewood does. I don't know about that. I mean, it's a great comment, and thank you for your call. I think that there's a resource issue, and Marciana talked a little bit about this too. There's resource issues that make our neighborhoods all look differently. That plays out every single day here in Chicago. But I also think, you know, I think as Roshana said, there are different situations when you live with prevailing violence. If you're inundated with gang members and you call the police on them for doing gang activity, what's the protection when the gang member gets back out on the street in 2 days? And I think that you've heard that over and over and over. And I don't have an opinion on this one way or the other. I'm just saying from the being focused in these conversations and listening to people from both sides, and we just had Dean Angelo, we just had Roshana, to try and understand some of the things we pull out. One of the things that gets pulled out is a lot of consternation around this no snitch concept. The idea that gang members and criminals, they won't tell. We saw that with Tyshawn Lee. People wouldn't talk. But there's a reason, because there have been instances in the past, and it's prevailing instances, where the criminals come back to the neighborhood and they want revenge. And there is no police protection to the people that you know are going to be revenged upon or find who are going to be hurt. So at some point or another, they just stay out of it. They don't want to be involved. And I would say as someone as a Chicagoan, I can understand that. And I'm not saying that I'm at that level, and I'm not in my neighborhood. I don't have the same issues that Rashawn is talking about in Inglewood, South Side, West Side, those kind of things. But I also know that I'm not sure that I would want to be put in that position. If there was someone on my block that was on the corner that was doing something nefarious, I'm not sure that I'm the kind of person who wants, excuse me, fellas, you need to move on. Like maybe or to call up and call the police, because I'm not sure what's going to happen to me. So 224 says the fact that people on the outside keep ranting about the no snitch culture means that the people aren't even trying to listen. That those people aren't even trying to listen. It's interesting. We'll continue the conversation. We have been on the download. Are the instances and the situations that have happened this week alone has made our head spin. And we will continue to have those conversations here on the program next week, the week after, the week after, the week after, the week after. It's important to Chicago, and it's important to us as human beings living together. So we will continue to try and get to the bottom of it. Coming up, we'll talk about why you don't take your vacation. What's the matter with you? What's the matter with me? I'm not going to lie, guys. I never take my full vacation. Professor Al Genie, the Download's resident philosopher, will be here. We'll talk with him about what's the philosophy behind us leaving vacation days on the table. And secondly, coming up at 9 o'clock, Lydia Lovelace, tremendous performer. She's got a new album out, and she is headlining at the Square Roots Festival in Lincoln Park this weekend, and she's going to perform live. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. You know, it's really interesting as we hit the summertime here in Chicago. It's such a beautiful time. And the first thing I think about is, hey, it's time for summer vacation. But the truth of the matter is that so many Chicagoans don't take their vacation. This is a problem that continues and continues. And it's less of a workplace issue and more, I think, of a psychological issue. So that means I turn to my resident philosopher here on the download, Al Jeaney. He is the professor of business ethics at the Quinlan School of Business at Loyola University Chicago. And he is our regular resident philosopher.
Resident philosopher.
I like that.
Resident philosopher. Yeah. I do, too. It's an honor to be here.
Good to see you.
Good to be here, indeed. And you're right about the lack of vacation time across America, but it's not just Chicago. It is across America.
Yeah.
And there's a real paradox here. You know, we kind of live in a post-subsistence economy, and a lot of people really have vacation options. For example, 87% of full-time employees do get a paid vacation. And on average, they get somewhere between 10 to 16 days of vacation time each year. But for the last couple of years, there's been a real phenomenon that people have left 4.9 days on the table,
what?
Not taken the time
now,
off.
Okay, so let's break this down. Is it economic? Meaning, are people afraid they're going to lose their job? Is that why they're saying, you know what, I don't, it's almost like, you know, like if I don't want to give up a show here on the download because, you know, Pete Zimmerman's going to step in and then I don't,
I don't have a
talk show. Is it that kind of
It's a little bit of both. First of all, I think you got to understand the real numbers here. According to creditcard.com, I don't know where I
great
found that site, but
great
what a
site.
Okay, 44% of us will not take vacations this year. 44% of the workforce won't take vacations this year. And I think it's a triple whammy. I think it is economic. I think it is psychological. And I also think this wonderful gift we have of this modern media has changed how we perceive time and how we understand our free time and our work time and our vacation time.
Well, I mean, there's a whole issue, and I've seen a lot of this. We've even talked about the concept of unplugging when people have
right.
vacation. But let's stay on the topic of people just are saying, you know what, I'm just not going to take it. And I'm guilty of this. And this is the last couple of years of my life where I found myself with a vacation. I remember when I worked at a different radio station, they didn't pay well. So one of the issues was they gave a good vacation.
Right.
And
right.
But then I just didn't take all of it. So at the end of the year, I didn't get it back. I just kind of lost it.
Right.
And I don't know if that makes me a bad person. What does that make me?
No, but that ties into this notion of to be away from work too long. The question becomes when you ask how'd it go, and say, well, everything was fine. You don't want to hear that. There is a concern about maintaining one's job integrity, maintaining one's face, maintaining one's responsibilities, but also because, again, of this new media. To go and come back to 5,000 emails, to go and to be bombarded, to go and yet not go away entirely because you have to carry your materials with you. That is, you will be contacted with you. We're suggesting that about 61% of the workforce does some work even on vacation. But I think still a major point is finances. I know we're doing better. I know, you know, the recession is calming down, but still not fast enough for everybody. And people are talking about tight budgets. And it's like when the recession was hitting right at the highest point.
Yeah.
What do we cut back? Well, restaurants. Well, the extra night
right.
out.
Anything and that makes us feel
anything
good.
And so you take time out and you think, well, we can have vacation at home, but that's a fallacy.
Let me ask you about the one thing that I find interesting, too, is just about the psychology and philosophy of vacation. Why do we have to take vacation?
Well, I think that we need vacations to get away from ourselves. And we think we need vacations to, we need downtime. There's a wonderful word in Italian, divertirsi, for vacations. That is to divert oneself from the usual, to not always be doing the same thing. And the reality is, as workers, whether you're a craftsman or a teacher or a talk show host or working on an assembly line, you need to step away in order to do it better. You can't do a matinee and two supper shows every day, 7 nights a week, and expect to be really, really good. I remember I was privileged to be at the last cycle of performances that Yul Brynner did on The King and I long ago, and he was dying of lung cancer, but he was doing this kind of as this, farewell, goodbye. And it was horrible, not because he was ill, because he had done it 10,000 times, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, came out exactly that way.
Right.
And so there is this notion of being away. And the very word recreation really means to recreate. We need leisure. We need to play. I always use two wonderful examples. One is Winston Churchill. You know what Churchill did? I mean, during the middle of the war, Churchill was in the hot seat. You know, Roosevelt was across the Atlantic and certainly had bodyguards and so on and so forth. But Churchill actually had five different guys walking around the kingdom to make sure it was, you know, decoys, et cetera, et cetera. You know what he did in the middle of the war when he was perhaps the first or second most important person? He laid bricks and painted. And laid bricks, he made walls, he made little workhouses, et cetera, on his estate. Just the repetition, the break of it all.
Yeah.
I mean, in Yalta, he takes Roosevelt over to a place and shows him his paintings, et cetera, et cetera. He needed the break. He couldn't do it all the time. The other quote, and I'm always hesitant, you know, you're never supposed to quote a Nazi. Albert Speer suggests that one of Hitler's real failures as a leader, if we just look at him as a leader, he never took time off. You know, he was frenetically always looking at detail, et cetera, et cetera. And that looking at detail, we get lost in the detail. And I think great artists need to walk away, and good workers need it as well.
Let's take on the idea of staycation. You kind of mentioned it a little bit. You see it more and more. People just can't afford to make extravagant vacations, make it to the ocean, you know, do things that are going to be family vacations. So instead, they stay at home. They just don't go to the office. You're saying that is essentially not a good idea.
Well, it doesn't work unless you really work at it. You have to literally, and you say, well, we're just going to hang around the house. Well, you know, you get up in the morning and you've got to work at it. Just as you're on vacation, I know when I'm with my wonderful wife, it's like if it's 10:30, we're exactly here, and at 11:15, we're exactly there, and at 12:15, we're, you know, she's got it down to the minute, if you will. You have to plan it. You have to actually get out of the house, get away, do something. And it's true, we have 1,000 wonderful activities in Chicago that you could easily busy yourself with.
Yeah, because a lot of people can't.
Right. But you have to work at it. You can't do it casually. Yeah, right. You have to say, I am on vacation. We're going to do these things. We're going to do really different things. And that's really important. I remember in the 50s, my father said to my wife, to my mother, that's a deep Freudian show. We'll do it some other time.
That's next month.
Said, honey, I found this place in Florida and it's got a kitchen. And my mother said, we're not going. I'm not cooking. I'm on vacation. And there's something to that. And to, you know, the routine of being home, I think, stales us to other options. But if you have to do it, you do it. By God, do it with a plan. Monday, we're doing this. Tuesday, we're doing this. You know, for me, here was my first vacation. My father took me to Riverview 2 days in a row when Riverview was the most gorgeous recreation park around.
Okay, so let's talk about, from the other side, that workers are, or the economy or companies are giving less and less vacation time.
Yeah.
Are they recognizing that people are wasting this time? I mean, how are they a part of this quote-unquote
I want to be
problem?
Very careful here. I don't think higher paid jobs are giving less and less vacation time. In fact, people are negotiating. They're offering more, but people aren't taking it. There's the difference. It isn't that I'm sure in some cases it is places don't give as much vacation time as people would want. But even when there is generous vacation time, people don't take all of it. In law offices, because you've got a client, you've got a case that you
but
can't get away.
But that's high end. I would say you're always going to get that at high end. But when you talk about people who may be working in retail or part time or any jobs that aren't at, you know, six figures. Vacation's at a premium. They start counting hours and moving stuff around.
They do count hours. But even when they have this time off, and we're talking about, it's pretty clear on this that 79% of people who are making higher paid jobs actually take that time, but only 35% of people with lower paid jobs and lower amounts of time take it because they can say, well, I can work extra time, I can work extra money. So it always is a financial matter. But I really think from a psychological and philosophical point of view, William James said it best. We live in this booming, buzzing confusion of reality. We need to step away from it. We need to, it's what Sofia Loren once said, el dolce fai niente, it is sweet to do nothing. E bisogno fai niente, it is necessary to do nothing. And so I think when we don't take vacations, we cheat ourselves. It doesn't have to be, we once did a show a long time ago. In fact, I think we won a little award about my first safari in Africa, and it was a wonderful experience, and I'd taken totally out of myself. And it was on that trip that I realized vacations are for taking us out of ourselves, that it isn't the sights we see, it's how we see those sights and how that affects our lives and how that changes our daily life.
Al Jeanney is the professor of business ethics at the Quinlan School of Business at Loyola University Chicago, and he's our resident philosopher here on The Download. Professor Jeanney, good to see you.
See you soon.
Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Tough night for Chris Sale and Jake Arrieta. I don't know what the latest line is on Jake Arrieta, but Chris Sale. I've been advocating. I feel like I've stopped short of like calling managers to make sure that Chris Sale is the starter for the All-Star game. But tonight was not very All-Star like. I think he's out of the game now, but 5 innings. I'm looking at his stats right now. 5 innings, 8 earned runs.
Hmm.
5 Ks, 2 walks. 8 earned runs against the Atlanta Braves, the last place team in the NL East.
Yeah, the Braves aren't very good. Beat the Cubs, too. Chris Sale's having a great year. One bad outing, or two bad outings.
He's had a couple bad outings.
What's his record now?
He's 14-2, and I get that. He's been lucky in the sense that I believe that he's had a couple of wins recently where he's given up 4 or 5 runs and got the win.
Mm-hmm.
He hasn't had a dominating outing in a while. You know, as part of the White Sox slide, he's been getting wins while they've been losing. But again, he has not. He has been lucky. Like even in this game, he's not going to get the win in this game. But it's 8-6.
Oh,
you know what I mean? Like the Sox are in it.
Yeah. How early is it? Early.
Now we're in the sixth, and the Braves just started the inning with a double off the reliever. So, but the point being that here it is again. They already put up 6 runs. So it's a hot night in Chicago where the ball's flying out of the park. But point being that you know. If it's Jose Quintana, he throws one 4-hitter and 1 run, and he loses 1-0. Yeah. Like there's something about the Sox and that guy. They got to trade him, I think.
I think all that kind of stuff all evens out, though. You know, you have a couple bad outings, you get a win, yeah. You know, to make up for the outings where you pitch great and
right.
Get a no decision or a loss even.
Arrieta's out of the game. But they have given up 7 runs, so I don't know what he's.
He came out when it was 4-4, but there were guys on base, so I think that eventually came around to score. I'm not sure exactly if he was charged for those runs, but
that... essentially you just saw the 2 Chicago pitchers who are likely to
start in the All-Star game.
Do a terrible job right before. There's a saying I want to say, but I can't say it on the radio.
You know what? The Cubs stink.
Yeah. They really do.
They are a bad team.
I mean, it says a lot about Dexter Fowler. I think that's the key, right? Yeah, I'm looking at Arrieta's line is... I'm getting to the box store. Box store. I don't know how to get here. I don't even know what I'm looking for.
But every time I look up, I see there's like a Miguel Montero pulling a young Pete Zimmerman, a catcher, throwing the ball into center field. I'm like, what's he doing? And then I look up and Travis Woods throwing it by Anthony Rizzo.
Yeah, they're not. Arrieta, 6 innings, 6 earned runs.
So we got, yeah.
9 hits, 1 walk, 6 strikeouts. Yikes. So essentially you're looking at Chris Sale and Jake Arrieta, the 2 dominant pitchers in baseball tonight, just having terrible outings as a tune-up. I hope that they weren't on the bubble. That's the problem. I hope that it's not like, should it be Arrieta or should it be Strasburg? And then Arrieta does this, you know. Now, I heard Steven Strasburg and Madison Bumgarner both are pitching on Sunday, so they are unavailable for the All-Star game. On the other side, Corey Kluber's had a pretty good year, and a couple of those Cleveland Indian pitchers.
Mm-hmm.
Kluber was outstanding tonight. I think he might even gone the distance, complete game. You know, so I'm sure Sale will get it because he's got 14 wins, but... If I were a manager and it is for home field advantage,
yeah,
I may be like, yeah, I think we'll go with someone else.
I know it. You know, a couple of weeks ago, I was actually concerned. I was actually going to, you know, pay attention to the All-Star game because it means something for the Cubs.
Right. Not, are you that down on it as a Cubs fan?
I'm down on it, man.
Do you feel like this is just the middle of the season? I mean, were expectations laid out way too high for this team at the beginning by having such a strong start? As a fan, were you like, they're going to win 115 or bust?
No, I wasn't that way, but I was excited about that strong start. I wasn't going to say they were as good as the Yankees and the Mariners and all that stuff. But, yeah, I just wanted them to win 97 games again.
Right.
The way they're playing, they may only win like 10 more games this
season. Well, you watch every single game. What's the problem? They're just fundamentally not focusing?
I'm not sure what the problem is. They're not hitting. Their relief pitching is terrible. They're not getting clutch hits. Clutch hits could come back from the disabled list. That's a
well,
thing.
It's, you know, I hate to say it. I mean, as I look at the tonight, let's say that Pittsburgh holds on in this win. They're up 7-4 in the eighth. with their coiffed beards.
Ponytails. Yeah.
A win, Pittsburgh goes a 7.5 back.
Yeah, I mean, they're right into it. They're playing Pittsburgh.
St. Louis, I don't know what St. Louis is doing tonight, but if they get a win, they're 7 back. I mean, a couple more losses right before a bad weekend, and you're at the All-Star break only 5 games up.
Yeah, and Pittsburgh's hot right now. They're a tough team. Yeah.
It's kind of interesting if you think about it, because at the beginning of the year, it was kind of a toss-up on which of these teams would be there at the end, the Cardinals, the Pirates, and the Cubs. The Cubs started so fast, we're like, the Pirates and Cardinals are done, but it's just maybe more of the curve. Here it all kind of comes together. The average, the mean has brought everybody down. And come August, September, it's going to be, everybody's going to be 3 games within each other.
Yeah, probably. Already starting to pace when I'm watching games.
You were pacing on game 2.
Yeah, everybody has bad stretches. You know, it's a long season. But they just got to get out of it.
Right.
And I don't, like Chris Sale, you know, Jake Arrieta hasn't been good for a while. He's gotten a couple of wins, I think. But
I just feel like both of those pitchers, but Arrieta especially, I don't know how you keep up that pace. I mean, he keeps up that pace, he's going to be the best pitcher in the history of baseball.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, what he did at the end of last year and even at the beginning of this year, no other pitcher's ever done. So the idea that now he's coming down to earth with a 6-run game here and a 4-run game here, that's what pitchers do.
Yeah.
Unless you're Clayton Kershaw.
Yeah.
And Clayton Kershaw would be the unanimous choice for the starter, but he's on the DL.
Maybe it's the Pilates. Maybe Jake's doing too many Pilates now. You could blame it on something.
I also wanted to say that by Dwayne Wade coming to Chicago, we have 3 Chicago athletes that are in the body issue in the ESPN where they get naked.
Jake, Dwayne, and Elena Del Don. Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, I think we would be the number one city that has naked athletes in magazines.
When you think about Chicago, do you think of fitness? As we look on Michigan Avenue.
I don't know if I really like that, the body thing. I mean, it's interesting, but it's just sort of like, yeah, I don't think I've ever thrown a baseball or wind it up in like a pitcher's wind-up naked. It's something that's foreign beyond belief where you're like, okay, that's not even like an Olympic pose. Like even Dwayne Wade's pose, you're like, oh, okay, he's just kind of like posing as a naked basketball player. I think he's got a basketball in his hand. With Arrieta, they have him in the actual stretch where he's up and he's got the leg kick and he's about to pitch. And I'm like, there's not a situation in my life that I can remember seeing a dude naked throwing a baseball, right? Like even Elena Deladon, she's the same thing. It's like a stylized. It's stylized. And you're like, that's a lot of skin. That's a tall lady.
That being said, when was the last time you looked at another ESPN, the magazine issue?
That is true. I've never looked at one. I've never been like, I got to get the ESPN body. I wonder if 12-year-olds are like, got to see what Jake Arrieta looks like naked.
Do people still cancel their Sports Illustrated subscriptions after the the swimsuit issue comes out? I always remember that was a big thing.
Well, I speaking of subscriptions, I got a letter today from Loretta on the north side, and it was a really nice letter about lead in the water.
Mm-hmm.
And then she said that she read an article in Wired magazine. She wrote it. It was a handwritten note, nice note. I love getting notes.
Yeah.
And but she said it's in Wired magazine. She check it out.
Oh, she gave you the magazine.
No, she gave me the insert that says you should subscribe to Wired magazine. Like, so she told me about the article she read in Wired, and she gave me like the little thing that
falls
out. Yeah, that you could send in to get a subscription to Wired. I was like, do you work for Wired?
Do you put her name in and your address?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Yeah, I should. That'd be good.
I guess you'd still have to pay for it. Or bill me later. Check bill me later.
I don't want to, I know that it's the wide, wild world of the internet,
mm-hmm.
but I'll just go to wired.com and they'll have that article that I can read it.
That was really nice.
But it was nice that she did that.
Yeah.
And, maybe I'll get a subscription just because it was such a nice gesture. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNradio.com. Coming up next, Lydia Lovelace, a great alt country singer, songwriter, and, musician, the kind of country punk. She's on Bloodshot Records here in Chicago, and she is headlining at the Square Roots Festival in Lincoln Square this weekend. Big festival. Pete, do you go to that festival?
Yeah, I normally do.
Yeah.
I think I'm going tomorrow, actually.
Oh, yeah, check it out.
Checking her out.
Her music is amazing. Her new album is called Real. It comes out August 19th. It's already, she put out a single called Longer, and it's, I mean, it's all the music sites are all about it, and it sounds great, and this is really, this is really highly anticipated, this album to come out. Lydia Lovelace will be my guest next. We'll hear some live music from her and talk about her career. Sound good? Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, the Square Roots Festival is coming back to Wells Park this weekend, and Saturday night's headliner is none other than Bloodshot Records' Lydia Lovelace. Track Longer off the record Real. The highly anticipated album is due out in August 19th. Real will be her fourth full-length album, her third with Chicago's Bloodshot Records. Lydia Lovelace is an alt-country singer-songwriter but has been called country punk by several media outlets and lauded by Rolling Stone, NPR, and Spin Magazine, which called her one of the top acts to watch in 2015. She headlines on Saturday at the North Stage at the Square Roots Festival in Lincoln Square, and she is my guest tonight at the big table. Lydia Lovelace, thanks for being here.
Hi, thank you.
And you brought your guitar, too. That's so great.
I did.
the album is, it is highly anticipated. People are very excited about this new work. The single Longer has already been released. Talk about the music, because even with the song Longer, you're really hearing almost like a maturity that's coming with that song that I think is why people are excited.
Yeah, I hope so. I think I've done some growing up recently, so I'm excited about it. I think it's a more fluid rock sound to me, as opposed to kind of all over the place where I've been in the past. So I'm looking forward to people.
Well, I mean, I kind of said it in the intro that, mm-hmm. you know, you've been called alt-country. You've also been called country punk. Do you identify with those kind of labels, those kind of categories?
I mean, yeah, but I think they're a little harsh. Maybe harsh isn't the right word, but sort of. They're both very strict genres, I think, and I don't feel like a very strict human, so I guess I feel like I'm a little swimmier than country or punk. I don't know. It's hard to explain.
Well, I mean, it isn't. I mean, there's been a lot written about, you know, the process of this record, about Real. There was mm-hmm. I've heard, you know, just reading the different articles about the, you know, writing stuff and then throwing it all away and starting over again. But there really has been a process that you've gone through by putting yourself into this record.
Yeah, I really wanted to make something that sounded sonically cohesive and sort of grown up. And I really wanted to put more effort into production this time, because I want to be known as someone who gets good sounds and makes good songs, as opposed to like, boy, she really sings about some serious stuff. You know, I wanted to be considered more of a musician and producer on this record, and I think we achieved that, hopefully.
Well, you went back home to Ohio, where you're from, to do the record, to work with your producer you worked with before.
Yeah.
How do you accomplish that? How do you accomplish putting the sound forward, actually producing a record that has those things that you just talked about in mind?
Mm-hmm. I think it's a lot of experimentation, because when I was younger, I was very reluctant to take suggestions from people. I was more like, I'm right all the time. And I think the time when I really started to grow as an artist was when I started being more open to experimentation and And that's why this record has a lot of keyboards and weird. There's like a power drill being played through a pedal at some point. So there's
what
a lot
that?
Of experimentation.
Where did you find yourself opening up for experimentation? What was it that moved you away from sort of this is my vision and mm-hmm. this is what I'm doing and collaborating?
I think it must have been just working with people who are a lot more talented than I am. Like my band is, they're all very talented musicians, and we've also played together at least me and the guitar players and the bass player have all played together for like at least 3 years now. So we have sort of our own language now, and it's a lot easier to communicate. So I can sort of be like, so it should sound like the Smiths, and everything just sort of goes out the window and becomes a song. So it's really interesting too.
Yeah, this, I mean, the record reel, you know, as you just mentioned about production and the sound and putting things together, is matched with the songwriting, mm-hmm. which is, you know, for all accounts in the interviews that you've done, has been pretty raw. The
yeah.
idea of essentially, you know, a life in which you have a quote that's circulated about sort of feeling like the last couple of years you've kind of been swimming around or flipping around or flopping mm-hmm. around, whatever the word was,
yeah.
You know, and masking some pain with substance abuse.
Yeah.
Talk about what it means to be sober and do this record, or to write about those pains and in such a personal way to put into music.
I mean, I guess you can take pain and sort of go to rock bottom and completely give up. But once you decide to not give up, you have to do something really cool. So that's kind of what this record was. It's the complete opposite of dying, I guess, which is why this record talks a lot about death and loss. And I've spent a lot of years just trying to be, I guess, a better person, not to get too deep. But
it's okay. It's Friday night in Chicago.
Yeah, this record was kind of written out of like going to therapy for a couple of years and trying to figure out why I do certain things. And writing is definitely a way to cope with pain as opposed to just sort of, you know, going to a party and smoking mm-hmm. 1,000 cigarettes. I mean, you can do that, but or you can have a really cool record instead.
Well, I mean, it's great. I mean, it's actually inspiring for those people who do have insecurities or, mm-hmm. you know, fears and may have problems with substance abuse to know that there are things like creative outlets, like music or other things that can help them sort of cope with dealing with it.
Yeah. And I mean, just music is so important to people. I mean, I have so many memories that are just ingrained just because of like what song I was listening to. I think it's a very therapeutic tool, even if you're not making it. So hopefully people can at least listen to this record and have some sort of hope. Hopefully it's a hopeful record. I don't feel like I've made very many hopeful records, but I think this one
That's not
should
what
be.
We expect from you. But I'm okay with it. Well, the new album is Real. It comes out in August 19th. The track Longer, the single, is out. We just heard a little bit of it, and you can get that on iTunes. Lydia Lovelace is headlining on Saturday night at the Square Roots Festival in Wells Park. We'll continue the conversation, and we'll hear some live music right after the break. Stay with us. Welcome back to Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Coffin. My guest in studio, Lydia Lovelace. Great singer-songwriter, alt-country, country punk, but let's just say singer-songwriter. Let's skip the categories. She's headlining at the Square Roots Festival, which is at Wells Park this weekend, a Saturday night. Her new album, Real, is out in August. We've heard the song Longer, which is a great song, and the video is great as well. What else is on this? I mean, because we haven't heard the other stuff that's on there. I mean, is this a thematic record when you talk about, you know, it's sort of being, quote unquote, real, but talking about, you know, the issues we were just talking about before the break? I mean, is there a theme to this record?
Oh, I wish I were good at themes. I mean, I think I piece together themes after I make things. I guess sort of the theme that I got out of this after I had made it was, I mean, I've struggled with depression for a long time, and I've often used the term, like, I don't feel like a real person, which is, like, a really silly thing to say because everyone is a real person. And it's kind of about how you have to scrape away the pretending when you're really depressed, and you have to, you know, try so hard and act like you're happy or even just okay. And when you kind of confront that and can just be yourself and accept that, and that's kind of reality. Also, I took a lot of mushrooms, maybe. I don't know.
It's a combination. Dealing with depression and mushrooms. It's right in there somewhere. That's where the art comes from.
It's a lot about perception and how you perceive things and how other people perceive them and sort of trying to meet in the middle and accept that everyone's going through some weird struggles and it's all going to be okay.
Yeah. As I always like to say, everybody's got something.
Yes.
Right? Lydia Loveless in studio. You brought your guitar as well. We'd love to hear something if you're willing. What are we going to hear here?
I think I want to do the title track, Real.
Real, off the album Real, which was released on August 19th. Here is Lydia Loveless.
When I'm watching TV, and I know I shouldn't be, because it doesn't compare to walking down your street. Well, I'm hanging off your live wire. I can't believe you don't see me. Cause I know just how she feels. Well, I know just what you do. I just wanna jump off the roof, but I'm waiting for a boy who wants to beg me not to do it. Oh, here he comes now, man, and he's gonna take my shaky hand. Well, no, he's not Peter Pan, but I really need him to be now, cause I know just how she feels. Well, I know just what you do. Well, nothing will change, well, at least not as far as I can see. When you hold my hand, you don't always have to wrench it out of me, man. Well, you could just hold my hand, and if you wanna run away with me, we can do that, yeah. Cause I know just how it feels. Man, I know exactly what I wanna do.
That's a title track off the album Real, coming out August 19th. Lydia Loveless in studio performing live. That's wonderful. Thank you so much.
Thank
it was
you.
Such a great performance to be in the room with you. I mean, it's your voice is so powerful.
Thank
it's
you.
It's obviously been, but it's been something that has really been your calling card for a while. I mean, you read the reviews and all of the stuff, even with the beginning of Bloodshot, there's really, everyone is attracted to your voice and how strong it is. It's for you, I mean, how do you evolve as you get older, as your music changes, as you move from more country punk to the rock stuff that you're doing on this record?
Mm-hmm.
How does your voice evolve?
I mean, it's obvious, I guess, when you say it, but it's an instrument, so you kind of learn how to use it. And I've had it with me longer than guitar, so I'm a little better at manipulating it. So it's just fun to mess around with it and kind of find the different ways you can use it. I don't know. I feel like it's my old pal. My talking voice isn't my favorite thing, so singing is way more fun.
Well, I mean, how do you do that? I mean, as you manipulate it and you try to find ways to stretch it or make it something or find new ways to use it. As a musician, how do you do that? I mean, especially when it's been your old pal. I mean, how do you find new ways to use it?
I guess I could probably attribute it to I'm really into humor, and I like doing weird voices throughout the day. And this is something that my husband will point out to me. Like, I turn into different characters throughout the day when I'm walking around, so I think that's probably a way that I tap into it. I'll also like write songs and be like, this sounds like a Bruce Springsteen song, and like sing it in Bruce Springsteen's voice. I don't know. It's just fun to me to sort of slip in and out of characters, and singing is a lot easier for me to sort of tap into that because it's not really you. Like when I'm sitting here talking to you, that feels, I could become insecure, but when you're singing, it's kind of like, it's just a weird sound. So it's hard to explain, but it's just fun to experiment with it. I don't know.
Lydia Loveless is my guest tonight here on The Download. She is headlining the Square Roots Festival in Wells Park this weekend on Saturday night at the North Stage. Her new album, Real, comes out on August 19th. The single, Longer, is out. We'll take a break for the news. We'll come back, talk a little bit more, and hear some more music.
Cool.
Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Coffin. My guest in studio at the big table, Lydia Loveless, tonight. She is in town headlining the Square Roots Festival, which is in Wells Park this weekend, Saturday night at the North Stage. The new album, Real, is out August 19th. The single, Longer, is already out. Lydia Loveless is on Bloodshot Records here in Chicago. You know, you're from Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw in your bio, I was reading about growing up, your dad was in a country bar. Talk about owning a bar and being involved in that environment as a kid.
That was a pretty brief period, but it was also, I mean, it's a memorable time because my dad was like a Presbyterian pastor right before that. It went from like no nail polish kids to like, well, I own a bar now. I'll be home at 4. And like, I can't say I was really there because I was like 8 till maybe I was like 10.
But you were immersed in that culture. Because
yeah, totally.
Musicians
and it was
were
also,
at the house, that kind of thing.
Yeah, there was that. And it was also a Mexican restaurant. And I grew up in a very small, sort of isolated, close-minded town. It was just funny to watch the reaction to a Mexican restaurant, which now Mexican food is everywhere and everyone loves it, but at the time it was like, I don't eat food I can't pronounce, where I was from. So people were very upset and angry, and my dad was like, I'm bringing you some culture, people. So there was a lot of, it kind of changed the way the town behaved and ate and looked at other people that weren't like white Ohioans. So it was an exciting time, and it was, I'm super proud of my dad for doing that.
Do you think it had any impact on you getting into music and you sort of establishing yourself as a country musician?
Probably not. I think that was just like, I was born with that. My family's super musical, and my dad is very, well, let's just say he's a little anti-authority and self-motivated. So he was just kind of like, if you're not doing something you love, then I'll I'd rather disown you than, like, see you do something that you don't like to do. So, yeah, I was just like, I want to be a pop star. And I took dance lessons and, you know, wrote crappy songs. And that was my dream. And my dad was like, cool, that's what you're going to do. I totally believe in this. Like, there's no doubt in my mind that you can do it. So probably, I think it was more my dad's attitude than, like, him owning a bar. Right. If anything, that probably turned me off of wanting to do it.
Right. Well, I mean, there's the punk rock aesthetic. Yeah. You know, talk about that. Talk about the anti-establishment in you and the idea of gravitating towards punk rock, even a little bit more before country. But the idea of being you know, sort of immersed in a punk rock culture, even in Ohio.
Yeah, I mean, and I'm reluctant to use the term punk rock anymore because it's become such a sort of, it's like, it's everything that it hates. You know, it's almost like you're wearing a uniform and you have to do this to be a punk. So mm-hmm. I'm too punk for punk. I don't know. But, yeah, I mean, the way I see country and punk mold together is because of the way I grew up, like, on a farm, in, like, a self-sustaining community and with, like, a self-employed dad and just really driven people. And now all my friends are, you know, they, like, paint pictures for a living, and I don't even know how people do that. So I guess I'm just really inspired by people who can propel themselves to keep existing without having to do something they don't enjoy. Like, I'm kind of amazed by that.
Music's been a part of your life for a long time now. Talk about Bloodshot Records, you know, with Nan and Rob, and how you got involved with Bloodshot Records and why you stay with them.
I like Bloodshot because they're just the kind of people I like. They're, you know, they're into the creative aspect of things. They're not into, like, I hate to use the term selling out, so I will try not to, but... you know, I like that I can have a conversation with them and sit across a table from them and, like, look at them as opposed to, like, well, I have to call the toll-free number to talk to my my label, and maybe I'll talk to Bob or Jim today. I don't know. Like, they're real people, and I enjoy that sort of relationship. It's a friendly relationship.
And they're huge supporters of you. Yeah. They were in here not too long ago, and they mentioned you as an artist that they're really into.
Yeah.
I mean, they have... As Chicago, I mean, they are icons when it comes to, I guess you would, they would probably bristle at the term alt country, but the roots rock and alt country, they're icons, and they are about the creative experience. So it is. I mean, I think that if that's what you're looking for, you're in the right company.
Yeah, I like passion, and I think they're passionate about what they do, because I am. So I don't know. I'm drawn to people like that. So,
as you are on stage this weekend at the Square Roots Festival, I keep wanting to call it the Folk and Roots Festival. It's the old name for it. But I mean, this is a big deal to be on stage and to have yourself at the headliner spot on a Saturday night.
Yeah.
When you think about it, coming to Chicago and playing a festival like this, which is really supporting the kind of music that you produce, mm-hmm. to be on stage in front of crowds, you know, that you know, in the thousands in Chicago, what does that mean to you?
It's amazing. This is what I've always wanted to do, and I just, playing live is, I mean, pretty much my favorite thing to do ever. It's like the way that you can do what you love and actually see people connecting with it. So it's completely exciting and awesome, dude. I hate to use the word awesome because I use it all the time, but it's a very exciting.
You want to play another song?
Sure.
What are we going to hear?
I can do Somewhere Else.
Somewhere Else?
Last record, Somewhere Else. Let's do title tracks, dude.
All right. Somewhere Else, the title track. From the album Somewhere Else. Lydia Loveless in studio. Take it away.
Well, all I'm looking for is good things to be a part of. Oh, wave the flag for the home team too long. Then again, things ain't love.
looking too good on the other side. The grass is greener, but it's tended by wolves. Say I wanna go, then I wanna stay at home, and I'm not gonna do anything at all. Well, I wanna be somewhere else tonight. Well, I want to be somewhere else tonight. Ooh, ooh. Well, you give me more love than a woman can stand. I keep trying to find a way. Because I guess I'm just the spoiled brat my daddy said that I was. Well, that used to make me so angry. And I say I wanna leave, then I say you're all I need, but I don't wanna be with anybody else.
Lydia Loveless, thank you so much. That was great.
You.
That was so wonderful. Somewhere Else, the title track off the record, Somewhere Else. When you play those songs, and you know, you just mentioned as we talked about Real, the new record that's coming out in August, You talk about the emotion that goes with that and having to peel back and having to get real when it comes to the things that you're going through.
Yeah.
When you play from your older records and Somewhere Else is just released in 2014, does it take you back to a different place?
Not really. It's actually, I've tried to update the songs to current emotions, so they're still exciting. Like you could go back and be like, I remember this time, but instead I try to make them relate to now, which makes them more interesting. And it also makes it fun to think about the lyrics in a way, if I did write them now, and how they could change. I don't know if that makes sense.
No, it does. And because I always wonder with musicians, especially when you're writing emotional music, you know, if it conjures up the emotions of the time when you wrote that song. You know, I just I always wonder about that for a singer-songwriter, because you pour so much into these songs, both of the songs we heard tonight on the show. Man, they're just so raw. And that's a good thing. And that makes great, passionate music. But I just wonder what toll it takes on you having to play those songs over and over and over, and if there is an emotional attachment.
Probably some kind of mental toll, but it's worth it.
Every time you play it, you have
keeps
to go back
exciting,
to therapy.
Yeah. I have to go to therapy after every show,
For you, I mean, is it as you mature and you create new music, do you think about the relationship to the old music? Do you think about, you know, where you were at and the places you were? I mean, obviously with some of the substance abuse stuff that you talk about, or drinking, do you think about the relationship from record to record?
Yeah, and I think about how I cannot say the same thing 8 times. And especially, I mean, being on my 4th record, and sometimes we'll run through like a really old song and I'm like, wow, I'm so much better now. But it's like, well, if I'm better than that, when will these songs start to sound really bad to me? I don't know. So it's, you kind of have to go back over things and understand why you don't like them anymore, why you don't feel that way, or why certain things might not be important to express anymore. But then at the same time, there's people who are like, that song really helped me. And I'm like, I'm sorry.
Well, people think about the people who consume it.
Yeah.
Probably it attaches to their situation, and
totally.
The lyrics mean something different to them. I mean, as a musician, do you think about that?
I mean, as a listener, too, of music, it's like when you hear a song is about something, like it means a lot to you, and you hear that it's about something else, and you're like, I wish I didn't know that. So, I kind of like to just not really talk too much about like where a song comes from or what its meaning is, because it is important to like let people grasp their own meaning from it, and for me to really let the song kind of move through time too and change in meaning for me, just to like to cope with life, this thing called life.
Well, Lydia Lovelace will be headlining the Square Roots Festival on Saturday night at the North Stage. This is in Wells Park. This is the former Folk and Roots Festival. Roots and Folk. That's been going on in Wells Park for a couple years now. The new record, Real, a highly anticipated album, will be out on August 19th. The single, Longer, is already out. Lydia Lovelace, thanks so much for coming in
and
spending some time and playing music. It's incredible. Thank you. I loved her, man. And the kicker. I didn't even do it. I didn't feel like it was relevant for our interview. But Lydia Lovelace is 25 years old.
Hate that.
25 years old, and there was a part in there that sometimes I want to resist the urge, you know, I want to be able to have the interview without always being like, and you're so young, I'm her aunt.
Yeah.
You're so young. No, I mean, obviously 25 years old, she's had a great career. She already put out 4 albums, EP, singles, but there was a part in there where she was talking about, you know, as I grow up and I'm learning, you know, maturing, I'm like, yeah, let's talk about the next song. That's so powerful, man, that voice.
Tremendous.
Someone on text 606 says, do I sense a little Stevie Nicks?
Oh, yeah, I can see
that. And I didn't
think
about that when I was listening. I was like, that's true. Yeah, she's got a very powerful Stevie Nicks kind of quality to her music. It's so good.
Yeah.
I really, really like it. And you know me, Pete. I mean, I'm as the listeners know, I'm probably going to go more towards hip hop
mm-hmm.
in my things that I'm going to jam all the way up. That's my new song I keep playing when I need to get myself jacked up. French Montana, Fat Joe, I'm all the way up. That's all they do the entire song. All the way up. But today I listened to Longer, the new track, Lydia Loveless, and to get ready for the interview and some of her old stuff. And I'm going back.
She's got a lot of great songs, and she's really an incredible songwriter, especially for being somebody so young. There's a song off one of her earlier records called Steve Earle. It's not about Steve Earle, but it's about somebody who looks like Steve Earle.
Right, right.
And if you're at home, you know, download that thing, listen to it, put it on Spotify. It's just like so funny and just, I don't know, just really good.
I read a whole thing about that, that's something about her music and her performance. And she kind of references it about she plays different characters, but she does have a lot of humor in her music.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
25 years old.
And last week, Donnie Trumpet, 23, had in here.
Show at the Taste of Chicago.
I know. Right? I saw a bunch of pictures, and
yeah,
I was like,
it looked awesome.
Man.
Chance was there and everything.
Ugh.
And Lydia Loveless will be on stage tomorrow night at in Lincoln Square. That's going to be awesome. That's a cool festival.
Yeah.
Is Robbie Foulkes doing it?
I don't think so.
I feel like that's like his. It should be like called the Robbie Foulkes Festival.
Or the Waco Brothers. They're usually sniffing around. If John Langford's around, I think
if
usually
they're not playing, they're there. Right?
Yeah.
Well, oh, there's guys. So many great. This is the month. I mean, now we start to sort of put it in gear. You've got the Square Roots Festival, which is this weekend. Then, it'd be next weekend is Pitchfork.
Mm-hmm.
Unbelievable.
Summer's cruising by.
We have some great, great guests coming up from Pitchfork. And can I talk about some of the ones we haven't done yet?
Yeah.
Even though they're, you know, things can change. Pretty cool. I think it's pretty cool. I think the listeners are going to love it. Diggable Planets going to be here on the show.
That's
How
the
cool
best.
Is that? How cool is that? Something cool like that. The download's cool like that. Diggable Planets on the download next week. How cool? It's awesome. Also, and then the next week, which I think is one, I mean, there's such great music on the program this summer. I mean, Lydia Loveless, that performance. There won't be a performance, I don't think, but reunion of the Blake Babies.
Yeah.
On this show, they're coming back to town. They're performing at Space up in Evanston on July 23rd.
Mm-hmm.
On the 21st, they're going to be on the show with us live. Frida Love, who was on our show, Frida Love Smith, John Strom, and Juliana Hatfield. For indie rock fans, for people who were around it in the 90s, one of the more influential bands of that generation. Obviously, Juliana Hatfield went solo after that and had a lot of hits and success. And we'll talk to them about reforming their band here
The
download. How cool is that?
Oh.
I'm all the way up.
I picked up the frying pan so you can swing it again.
Welcome back to Download here on WGN Radio. Well, it's time to put the Shark Tank Steve Gadlin into the frying pan. Steve Gadlin is the brain behind a successful local business. I want to draw a cat for you. He presented his business idea on the television program Shark Tank, and he snagged Mark Cuban as a principal investor. So now Steve has to go back to Cuban with new ideas. Before he goes into that pressure cooker, he comes to WGN Radio to jump into the frying pan. Yeah. He's giving us his exclusive business idea so we can poke holes in it and give Steve the confidence he needs to pitch it to Mark Cuban himself. Steve Gadlin, welcome back to the frying pan, my friend.
Hey, thanks for having me, Justin. Happy to be here.
Yeah, always great to have you here. How you feeling this week?
Pretty good. You know, I think last week, again, it's just I ended up with a product that was misunderstood by your listeners. I think this week we're keeping it simple. Got a product that's a real winner. I don't see how.
They all run together to me at this point. What was last week?
Yeah, the pinata bomb. It was a device that helped disperse candy in a pinata by giving it a fair 100-yard, explosive finale. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. The people did. I don't know if they misunderstood it. I think they just. I just think they didn't like it.
Possible.
Yeah. Okay, well, Steve Gadlin, of course, inventor, innovator, entrepreneur, the hashtag frying pan on Twitter, or you can call in at 312-981-7200. Steve Gadlin, what is this week's frying pan?
Yeah, so, you know, I think if you look around, you see people constantly looking at their phones or their digital watches and checking out the time. You know, people are real obsessed with time these days, and that constant pulling out a device to check it is, you know, it's not only, it doesn't only make you look weird, but we don't like it either. We feel this addiction to checking the time. So what I've invented is what I'm calling the time cap. So it's a baseball cap style hat that sits on your head, and underneath the brim, where no one can see but you, is a digital readout of the time. So what you can do then is you just merely look up a tiny bit, and you'll always know what time it is. And you can do it subconsciously to sort of fill that addiction we have to knowing what time it is. That way you're not always reaching for your phone or taking a look at your watch or doing other things that pull you away from people, human relationships, society.
Right. Okay. It's called Time Cap.
Yeah. And the digital readout's actually projected from the lower brim. So you don't, it's not like it's flat on. It's actually in the proper perspective, floating a little bit below the brim using holographic and Bluetooth technology.
All right. There you go. Early on, you got the Bluetooth in. I appreciate that. Mm-hmm. 312-981-7200, that's the phone number to call, 312-981-7200. But I do like it, and I do. I have some questions, mostly about what kind of digital readout we're talking about. Is it halogen? Is it more of a blue light? But I want to keep these for the listeners because I want to let them ask the questions. I'm the objective. I'm just the point guard. I just move the ball around. I don't have an opinion on this. There you go. Steve's got some business going on there. 312-981-7200. Why don't we take a break while the calls are coming in and the texts, and we will come back and see if you like the idea of Time Cap, a baseball cap that has the time on the inside of the bill so you can just look up and see what time it is at any given time.
I pick up the frying pan so you can swing it again.
It's down low here on 720 WGN, and it's Friday night at 10 o'clock, so you know what that means. It is time for the frying pan. Local entrepreneur, innovator, inventor Steve Gadlin. He won on the show, the popular show, wildly popular show, Shark Tank, with his idea, I Want to Draw a Cat for You.com, where he draws stick figure cats, sends them into mail to you. He got a development deal with Mark Cuban. And now, before he brings new ideas to Mark Cuban, he brings them here to the download. Steve Gadlin, you're back on the line here. Tell us about tonight's idea, Time Cap.
Yeah, so first I want to apologize for that noise. My daughter was being dropped off from a play date, and I forgot to hit mute on my phone.
It's late for a play date, but that's okay.
Well, it was an undernighter. It's a new thing kids do where they don't quite sleep over. They just stay late enough to where they should be in bed.
It sounds like one of your ideas.
Well, it is. It's something I brought up to the community, and all the parents were on board, so it is something I thought of first. Though it's in a lot of other neighborhoods now, too. Anyway, tonight's idea was Time Cap, which is a long-brimmed ball cap that, you know, because of our addiction to people are always grabbing their cell phones and looking at their digital watches to see what time it is, and it's become rude, and it's pulled us away from human interaction. So what Time Cap is a very long-brimmed baseball cap that projects the time digitally to where you see it in your upper peripheral vision, or if you move your eyeballs toward the back of your head, you get a real clear view of the time. So you can do this in a very inconspicuous manner in all social occasions without pulling yourself away from the people who are surrounding you.
That's good. I like it. I think you guys might have a winner here. And judging by the text, I have to say it's very positive, very optimistic. The number 312 981 7200-312-981-7200. That's the phone number. Let's go through some of these texts and see what we have tonight. You can also call in 312-981-7200. 773 says, yes, I'm always wondering what time it is when I'm walking my dog. This would solve that problem.
Yeah, because with this long-brimmed cap, you'll be able to roll your eyes toward the back of your head just a little bit, and you'll know the time without having to pull out your phone or look at your digital watch. And that way, you're not pulling yourself away from the social engagement of walking your pet.
Let me ask a question. I just picked this up, and someone just texted us too. Long build. What do you mean by long build?
Okay, so in order to get this holographic Bluetooth technology to display the time, the bill of the cap is about three times the length of a normal baseball cap. So what it'll do is block out some of what's above you, but it will project that time digitally down so that you can see it in your upper peripheral vision.
Okay. 630 says this is a good idea. Not bad.
Great.
There you go. 773 says time cap is stupid, but people will buy novelty for a while.
Well, look, and that's the point. Remember, these pitches are not so much to the consumer as they are practice pitches for the investor.
All right.
So, as we bring this thing to the consumer, the pitch will be a lot different. Right now, we're just trying to show investors that, yes, this is a product that many people will buy and will be quite profitable to invest in.
Okay. This 815 says this might be this guy's best idea yet. Maybe a Bluetooth connection to a Fitbit type device.
Well, the Bluetooth is really there to help supplement the holographic technology. And I'll be honest, it's not something I completely understand, but my engineers assure me that it's key. We're paying a lot of money to get it in there, I'll tell you that.
224 says time cap would actually be useful, especially if it's a small clip under the bill. I wear ball caps all the time.
Well, no, it's not a clip under the bill, and again, it's a long bill, about three times the length of a normal cap bill, and it's that long because there's a lot of technology in there that projects this Bluetooth and hologram digital projection of the time in a place so that it's just in your upper peripheral vision.
Yeah. Okay. Questions are coming in. What if I wear your hat backwards?
Yeah, well, if you wear the hat backwards, you will not be able to see the digital projection because it will be projecting over the back of your shoulder. And that's actually something we do not recommend because it's sort of like a laser hologram technology. If it's projecting on, close to your skin, if you have that long bill going down your back, you will probably over time develop sores or burn marks in the spot of your back where it projects.
That's not good.
Well, no, but we don't think this is a hat people are going to wear backwards. You lose the whole function of getting that digital projection of the time in your upper peripheral.
It just seems the more, you're getting a lot of great on the initial pitch, the concept of a time digitally put onto a hat. That had got a lot of attention. But as questions sort of progress, there's more to this than meets the eye. So let's keep going.
And that's how pitches work. You tease them in, right? You pull them in with your elevator pitch, and then you discuss the details through further questioning,
right,
which sometimes meet or exceed expectations.
Right.
See, I've pitched products on Shark Tank before, so I'm pretty familiar with the normal pattern of a pitch.
Oh, okay. 312-981-7200. 847 says, yes, I'll buy 30.
That's great.
That is great, right?
Yeah, that's fantastic. They must have 30 heads.
773 says, great, now my shoes won't get wet in the rain, and I'll always know what time it is.
Well, that's true. That's actually very true. And I'll say this isn't, meant to be a rain blocking device, but because of the extra long bill, you are going to naturally block some rain that comes down, right in front of you. So your shoes may stay a little drier than usual.
Okay.
You will always know what time it is.
Yeah, right. 224 says, no, I think people will look too often and be distracted from conversation, etc.
Yes, well, that's the point. That's what happens now with their digital watches and their cellular telephones. So, you know, those are things that really take your eyes away from conversation. With this, you can look 30 times in a conversation, and it will only look like your head, your eyeballs are slightly rolling back in your head, which is far less disconcerting.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, that's another question I want to ask about the rolling the eyes back in the head. That's that's a thing you to look at this. You're not only looking up, but you have to roll your eyes back into your head.
Yeah, you roll. Well, it is looking up, but it's looking very up. Okay, so imagine you're not just looking up, but you're looking very up without moving your head. So there is this motion of rolling your eyes back in your head a bit. But I tell you, it's a natural. Our muscles are built for that type of eyeball movement. You see it in movies a lot. I think in The Exorcist, you see this happening. But it's a natural, it's almost a reflexive action. And once you're doing it hundreds of times a day to check the digital projection, it becomes very natural, begins to look very natural. And it's far less disconcerting than those people who are constantly whipping out their phones or their digital watches.
Okay, let's go to Jim. Jim is on the line. Jim, welcome to the frying pan. Yay or nay on time cap?
I would have to say nay, because you just said that people looking at their watch or looking at their phone, I would feel more annoyed with somebody rolling their eyes. I would think that they're not interested in what I'm saying. Or basically, if they were in, say, a meeting or something like that, I would feel very uncomfortable with somebody wearing a baseball cap.
Yeah. You know.
Well, that's a good point. No,
thanks, Jim.
I'll tell you this, though. It's, the person you're talking to would have a hard time even seeing you roll your eyes back because that brim is three times longer than the natural cap brim. It's likely they're not seeing anything above your nose, to be honest. And in a meeting, you know, I'd say most meeting rooms will have clocks on the wall. So I think it's appropriate to take off your time cap, put it on the table, and then put it back on as you leave the room. We understand it's not always appropriate to wear a triple-length brimmed cap in all social situations.
Yeah,
but for casual conversations on the street, rock and roll concerts, sporting events, things like that, we think it's quite appropriate.
Yeah, there's someone who actually references that saying. 331 says, home girl. I'm not sure who that's referring to, me or you. I was taught not to wear a hat inside. Nay, crappy idea.
Okay, well, I'll tell you what. It used to be that the tradition was you don't carry a telephone in your pocket, but that's something we're all quite used to now. So with a lot of my ideas, they're very forward-thinking, and they assume a cultural evolution of some sorts. Now, I said cultural evolution. It sounded like cultural revolution, and to be honest, it's going to be both.
Oh, wow. There's something, maybe there's a play in there somewhere you can use for the marketing tag.
Possibly.
Yeah. 847 says, stupid. Where to wear it? The house, work, church, receptions? I don't think so. Times the length of a normal bill? If someone has such a serious problem with knowing the time, they might be better off just seeing a psychiatrist.
Okay. To answer the first question, where do you wear it? I thought it was clear. It goes on your head the same way a baseball cap would. And second, let's not call this a psychological issue. I mean, look out on the street, follow one person as they walk a block. I bet you they pull out their phone or look at their digital watch like 30 times in one block.
A couple guys now on Michigan Avenue doing the same thing.
Yeah. It's not a disease, and it's here to stay. So instead of sending everyone in the world to a psychiatrist, why don't we work, what I'm doing is working to invent a product.
It's like restorative
that helps
justice.
It acknowledges the issue, and it betters our lives.
Okay, let me keep going here. I'll buy five for the band members at work.
Great.
Okay, there you go, 330. 219 says, time cap should be called, your time is up.
Hmm.
That's good.
Well, that's very clever, because your time is up. And I don't know if the caller caught that, but what I catch in that is a double entendre. Sort,
yeah, I think that's
because
what
the time is actually.
But I think that's what. I think that,
it's digitally projected.
I know
when you look up.
I think that's what they meant.
Well, I think I understood that quickly. I don't know if they understood what they were saying when they said it.
Oh, okay.
But you know, I'm quick.
Yeah,
quick
no, thinker. obviously. Mm-hmm. Let's go. A question from 312. How much does this thing weigh?
That's a great question. So, as you may assume, hologram and Bluetooth technology is not the lightest technology on the market. Mm-hmm. So it's heavier than most hats. It's about 5 pounds of additional weight on your head than you would feel if you put on a normal baseball cap. But again, if you look at people in some countries, they carry jugs of water or buckets on their head, and it's just the type of thing that you'll develop the muscle memory for and you won't feel. We have these great things called Pacinian corpuscles. Do you know what those are?
I don't know.
Well, if you put your finger on your arm and leave it there, after a while, you don't feel it anymore. And that's because of Pacinian corpuscles. Hmm. So it's a similar thing here with this hat. So it's heavier than other caps. But I tell you, after a while, you don't even notice. And the benefit of being able to see that digital time projection outweighs the weight of the hat.
Okay. All right. 312-981-7200. Let's take a break. Let's take a break and get to the news. We'll come back. Okay. I got a lot of texts to get through, some good ones, some colorful ones. Also, some people on the line. Glenn, stay on the line. 312-981-7200. It's the frying pan, Steve Gadlin's idea this week. Time cap. A baseball cap with a brim that's about three times the size of a regular hat that puts a hologram of the time on the inside of the bill so you can always look up to check the time. All right.
Yeah,
sounds good. Yeah, sounds good. Stay with us, okay? All right.
Mm-hmm. I'll pick up the frying pan so you can swing it again.
It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman, and it's Friday night, 10 o'clock hour. That means it's time for the frying pan. Steve Gadlin, our local entrepreneur, innovator, inventor, the man behind IWantToDrawACatView.com, which won on Shark Tank. He now has a development deal with Mark Cuban. Before he brings his latest ideas to him, he brings them here to Download Nation. Tonight, Steve Gadlin's idea, time cap. Steve, time cap.
Yeah, the time cap is a cap that you wear the same way you would a baseball cap, with a brim about three times the length and about 17 times the weight. And what it has in it is some technology, both Bluetooth and hologram, that project a hologram, a digital projection of the time, so that if you roll your eyes back just right, you'll be able to see it without having to look at your digital watch or your telephone to, you know, keep yourself in the moment. So it's a social clothing, I call it.
Social clothing. That's great.
Yeah.
You've got some great marketing attached to this.
Thanks, I appreciate it.
Yeah, these are some great stuff. Let's go to Glenn. Glenn, do we like it? Yay or nay on time cap?
I would say a nay. Correct me if I'm wrong. I think I heard you say that if you wear the cap backwards, you probably will get a burn on your back.
Sore.
So
right.
If you wear it forwards, what's going to happen to your face?
Great question, Glenn. I had the same thought. Steve?
Yeah. No, that's a great question, Glenn. And the issue is this. When you wear it on your back, it's sort of aimed right at your skin. You know, if you think about a brim when you wear a cap backwards, it hangs over the back of your neck and it's almost flush up against your skin. And it won't burn. I'd say over 3 weeks, you probably will develop sores where that projection sits on your back. Not really burns, more like, I don't know what to call them. But when you wear it forward, that brim is not projecting, aiming at you. The hologram, the digital projection, is projected more down at the ground, and then you intercept that with your eyes. So there's no contact that way. It's not dangerous unless you're constantly waving your hand under the digital projection, or aiming it at a friend or something like that. But it really takes weeks of exposure before there are any foul effects.
Okay, that seems promising.
Yeah.
312-981-7200, the number to talk to Steve about, ask questions, maybe give him some comments and feedback. Also, you can text us at 312-981-7200. 779 says, I'm very interested in the time cap. Can I get my favorite sports teams on that hat, like the Cubs? Not the White Sox.
Right, of course. Well, here's the thing. These are licensing deals that we have to strike, and before we can do that, we need some investment capital. So the hope is, yes, you'll be able to get sports teams, the titles of your favorite films, pictures of your friends, anything. The same things you would put on a normal baseball cap, only now you have three times the brim size. So you can put three sports teams on there.
815 wants to know, how about athletes such as runners using it to use a timer or stopwatch instead of just a clock with the current time?
Yeah, that is an idea I had. That's a great idea I had, and that's something we're experimenting on. Because of the added weight of the hat, it gives you a top-heavy feeling you really have to get used to. So for athletes where muscle memory is so important, we found that it doesn't help in athletic situations, something your body really has to get used to. But we're experimenting all the time, and I'm coming up with great new ideas to help make that happen.
779 also wants to know, is this not why there was Google Glass? I mean, this is the same concept, display time and more.
Yeah. Well, that person's using double negatives, and I'm having a hard time deciphering the question.
I think they're saying, isn't this what Google Glass tried to accomplish, but it didn't work?
Oh, sure, with a $1,500 device.
How much is the hat? How much are we going for in the hat?
$700. So that's less than half the price of Google Glass, and provides actually a much more useful function set.
773 wants to know, is it a flat build cap or can I bend it?
Well, I wouldn't bend it because it is laden with electronics. So no, it is flat build.
708 wants to know, why not a pencil sleeve for the shirt pocket with the clock on it so other people know as well?
No, that's interesting. Now, people, in a world where everyone wears their own time cap, who needs a pencil sleeve, right?
Right. Would it be really easier to wear a huge hat instead of looking at your watch? This is 312.
Oh, sure. If we're going easy, you know what? Keep pulling your phone out of your pocket. Keep taking a peek at that digital watch of yours. Because easy, good for you. We're not trying to make things easy. We're trying to revitalize social interaction here. Mm-hmm. So, there's a cost with all things. There, exercise makes you fit, right? This is exercise in a way for social engagement.
847's got a good question from something you mentioned earlier. Can you explain the term muscle memory?
Yeah, sure. Muscle memory is sort of when you get used to something. Again, going back to those Pacinian corpuscles, having a muscle memory. Great tennis players have muscle memory for a backhand and a forehand. Their muscles remember how to move in order to achieve that superior result. So that's what I'm talking about when I say muscle memory.
Hmm. Okay. All right. 312-981-7200. 312 says, I have an idea. Why not make a softer pillowcase?
Okay. That's a great idea. And I'd be happy to collaborate with them on that project. Not sure how it relates to the time cap.
Right. I don't know what this one means. But 779 says, why not have Mickey Mouse jump off the brim of the hat and position his arms into whatever time it is?
That's great. That'd be a great novelty version of the time cap. But again, licensing issues, which I'll tell you, that's something I learned about on your show after several conversations with attorneys.
Star Wars.
After the Star Wars banana peeler.
Right. You had trouble when you got in a big fight with the listeners. It was a 30-minute fight about licensing. Really derailed the electronic banana peeler.
Yes. So I'm thinking of maybe bringing that one back, just acknowledging the licensing issues. If I'm ever out of ideas, which good luck.
Yeah, obviously you're prolific, if anything else. 773, it's heavy. This person is wondering if they think it's too heavy to wear on your head.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it is too heavy to wear on your head until you get used to it. You know, pants are too heavy to wear on your legs when you're a baby. That's why you wear onesies and other layette outfits. But your body gets used to the weight of clothing, and then you're a grown-up. So the same thing happens with the time cap.
Okay.
You know, at first we're all babies, and then we grow up.
And then we grow up. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll read some more of the colorful text, but also get in here if you have questions, comments, feedback, just blatant observations. 312-981-7200. We'll wrap up with Steve Gadlin here in the frying pan with the idea time cap right after the break. Stay with us. It's a frying pan here on the download, 720 WGN, every Friday night at 10 o'clock. Local entrepreneur, innovator, and inventor Steve Gadlin brings us a new idea before he can pitch it to his boss, Mark Cuban. Steve Gadlin, this week's idea, time cap. What is time cap?
Time cap is a baseball cap style device that projects using holograms and Bluetooth the time in your upper peripheral vision when you wear it, so that you don't have to pull out your phone and look at your digital watch every time you're having a conversation with somebody. You know, we're time addicts now, and this helps you stay social and still figure out the time.
All right, 312-981-7200. I've got probably 10, 15, 20 texts, a couple calls that came in. People are concerned about your pronunciation of the word digital.
No, I'm not using the word digital. I'm using the word digital.
But it's pronounced digital.
Well, digital is when you're referring to the fingers in a body, be it animal or human. Digital refers to how do I explain it? If you look at a watch, the kind without the hands, where they represent the numbers.
Yeah, using, right, like a digital clock.
Well, but that's pronounced digital. So digital is when you're referring to fingers, and there are no fingers. While there are hands, there are no fingers on a clock.
No, but I think the fingers are digits, and the digital refers to computerized, the idea of projecting, not unlike what you're talking about with the time cap, the exact same thing you're talking about with the time cap, digital projection.
Well, I think we're talking about different words.
All right.
Digital.
Let's go to Lisa. Lisa, yay or nay on the time cap?
Oh, definite yay. Definite yay. Definitely, you hit it out of the park with this one. I'm a huge fan of the Cobby, too. Got my family really wanting that one. But this would be great on, like, my big-brimmed beach hat, because I hate wearing my digital watch, and I hate having my phone at the beach. This is perfect. Can we have it made into a beach hat? I mean.
Well, wow. You know, there was another invention.
Thanks, Lisa.
I had. Lisa, you're fantastic. There was another invention I brought up that allowed you to attach multiple brims to a single cap. And I suppose we could put four of these large brims. You know, if we combine those inventions, there you could definitely wear it to the beach.
Yeah, there was someone who referenced that a little bit earlier. I was saving that. They had they said, will this work with your other hat with the four different bills? So if I want to look at the day and date or the year, I can just switch bills.
Well, that's a very good idea, and actually, coincidentally, one that I was pitching back and forth with one of my business partners earlier. So, it's in the works. We're going to start with the simple version. Plus, remember, the brim is mighty heavy. It adds about 5 pounds to the cap. So adding four initially would make it quite a heavy piece of clothing. But, you know, again, with the added benefit for sure.
I can't believe Lisa called it digital. I feel like she's a plant. I feel like no one says digital. It's digital.
They're two different words. One is pronounced digital, and one is pronounced digital.
I can't argue with a follow up, but I don't know if I trust the legitimacy of that. Let's go to Mark. Mark, yay or nay? Yay or nay on
legitimacy.
Okay, bring that down a little bit. Yeah, oh, that was you, Gadlin, giving it back. Mark, yay or nay on time cap?
Yay on time cap, but 5 pounds is unnecessary. Virtual reality goggles that are available, like the Samsung VR, are about a pound to a pound and a half. 4 to 5 pounds is unnecessary.
Well, that's virtual reality reality technology. We're using Bluetooth and holographic technology, which is quite a bit more advanced than VR. And with that comes added weight.
Yeah. What do you think of that, Mark?
I don't buy it. Sorry.
Well, I don't buy what you're saying.
Mark, you got any response to that? No, he's gone. Okay, he didn't like the adversarial tone.
It sounds like a member of Big Cap calling in to spread some disinformation, to be honest. That's fine. That to me tells me the product's a success.
630 says, sounds great if you want to look like a member of the Thompson twins.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with them.
No, they're good. They got a lot of long brim hats.
Good. Well, you know, that just shows that there's fashion for it. Are these like the Olsen twins? Are they fashion ravens?
They're not. They're British trio duo.
Don't talk to me about British.
Well, okay, I won't. 773 says, your pronunciation of digital sucks.
Well, I can pronounce the word digital just fine. And another thing I can do is pronounce the word digital. So, you know.
847 says, at least nobody will blow their hand off like last week, but at least they're going to look like a duck.
Yeah, you know, they do kind of look like a duck, but a duck with a fine sense of time. Mm-hmm. Duck who always knows where he needs to be when. So, yeah, and no one has ever blown their hand off with a pinata bomb.
Yeah. 847, maybe Steve could put an image of CP3P on the cap.
That's great. You know, that. Again, because he is in the public domain, I think we are able to use CP3P. But I think it was the Star Wars theme music you had. I don't remember.
No, don't get started again.
Okay.
Someone just texted us a picture of the Thompson twins.
Oh,
that's great. That's a long brim hat.
Yeah, I am not in studio today. I hope to be next week, though. Next week. I'll be in town for a haircut. And I always like to drop in the studio.
Yeah,
maybe I'll bring some samples.
Yeah,
great.
773 says, can Time Cop help me get girls or end terrorism?
Well, Time Cop can, sure.
Oh, right,
he's
I see.
Police officer who travels through time. Time Cap, though, you know, it will help you get girls because you'll never be late for a date.
708 says, my wife is extremely busty. Is this a recommendation for her? I don't want the laser beam to be a problem.
Ah, I see what they're saying. You know, it's, again, because of the distance between the brim and the bosom, because of the way we wear hats when we wear them forward, I would say it would be about 7 or 8 months before she began to develop sores. So she'd be fine.
Okay. 847 says, hi, I'm Carol. I'd rather have a cat with a radio in it, and I like to listen to the Cubs.
A cat with a radio in it.
I'm not sure what that has anything to do with what we're talking about, but
I tell you, it's given me an idea. A cat or a cap, did she say?
It says cap, but maybe she means cap. But she did
I
say
think she
cat.
Means cat. Yeah, I think she
I'd
means
rather a have
cat.
A cap with a radio in it. I like to listen to the Cubs. That makes a lot more sense than what I read, which is I'd like to have a cat in the radio. She did say cat, C-A-T, but I think she meant cat.
And that to me is far more exciting.
Yeah, that's right. That got your attention, right?
It did.
All right. Keep going here. Let's see. I'd rather have a female voice whisper the time in my ear. Right. That's what they're going for. Can you make this hat say Make America Great Again on the front?
Well, that's licensed by someone else and someone who I don't care for. So, no.
Oh, usually you keep politics out of it.
Well, I try to, yes. But with some of the statements he's made lately, I just can't put my name behind his.
630 says, what's up with diggable versus digital? I bet Steve pronounces Dolby as doubly.
Well, doubly is a word I do use when I say, oh, that's doubly nice, you know, meaning it's twice as nice as something. And again, we've talked about this. There are two different words here. And I think maybe it's because we're on AM callers are having difficulty hearing it properly, but I am saying digital, not referring to fingers.
That may go into the text of the night, 773, which is a good one for you. It's criticism. This guy speaks as if he's smarter and wittier than the listeners. Big turnoff.
Well, again, I'm not trying to find a date, right? Sorry if people aren't being turned on by my wit and my intelligence. I speak as an inventor, though. You know, I speak as someone who has studied and who comes to the listener with ideas that I'm proud of. So I apologize if that comes off as anything but delightful.
773 says, Steve sounds like a child. If someone suggests something, he always says, I thought of that. If he doesn't like it, he says, I don't buy what you're saying. Admit when you're wrong or somebody has a better idea than you.
Well, I will. I will. When it happens, I will.
Okay. 773 said you can't argue with a follow-up. Change that to you can't argue with a moron. So I think that's you.
Well, yeah, I don't know. I think they're talking about one of the callers. And frankly, if we could keep things a little more civil.
Yeah,
you know,
I agree.
People are calling in with their ideas, and sometimes they're not the best ideas. But not everyone who calls in is an established inventor who's one on Shark Tank like myself. So we should be a little more forgiving.
Right. 708 says figure out how to read a dictionary. 847 says goofball, check any dictionary. There's read a dictionary. There's a lot of dictionary references here.
Yeah, I'm not sure why.
All right. And then the you're wrong. I'm just trying to get through some stuff that's going to be more specific. You're wrong. Okay, I have one more I want to get to. I just have to find it because it's a perfect way to end this segment tonight.
Yeah.
It's good. I just lost it with all these texts. All right, 847 with the text of the night. How can I start a peaceful protest to remove Steve Gadlin from the radio?
Well,
that's just appropriate for what's happening right now in our country.
Yeah, it is. And I am about to get off the radio as the looks like we're running out of time. So
whoever you are in the world.
Go ahead.
No, that's it. You know, I don't know what they can do. If a peaceful protest starts, you know, sign me up if they got T-shirts. That's for sure.
All right, Steve Gadlin. I think you got a lot of really good yays, but as the questions unfolded on TimeCap, you got a little bit more nays. So I'm not sure if it was a win or not, but I would say that this is one of the more successful pitches. TimeCap was a little bit of a success, a little bit of a failure, but that's what makes Steve Gadlin tick.
Steve Gadlin. You know, maybe I'll bring this one to Cuba and I'll tell you about it next week.
Yeah, that could be good. Steve Gadlin, I want to draw a cat for you.com. He's a regular here on the Frying Pan. He'll be back next Friday at 10 o'clock. Steve Gadlin, thanks for doing this, bud.
Thanks for having me. Take care.
This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNradio.com. All right, that's going to do it for the download tonight. Thanks for listening. Thanks for the whole week. We got a great week coming up next week. Patty Vasquez is out. And again, Jen Bosworth. Jen, good to see you.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm well.
How did last night go?
It was a really good training ground. I was here for Paris, which is a different sort of nightmare. But it was great. I just really relied on Rob Martier and the people that know exactly what was going on. And we just opened the phone lines.
It's great.
That's all you can do.
It's one of the great things about radio. I mean, it's better than social media.
Totally.
Jen, what do you got tonight?
We are talking to super agent Kate over here from Shirley Hamilton.
All right.
Talking about how to get your kids famous.
Oh, good.
And we're also the Tilted Kilts coming in.
Oh, I love that. I was going to say I love that place, but I don't really know that place.
I don't either, but there's going to be booze. And there you go. We're going to talk about some other.
It's funny that I quickly, as a guy, was like, I love that place.
I know.
I'm like, wait a second.
My husband is like, I love.
Yeah, I just did exactly what your husband did.
Yeah.
I have been in there one time for lunch. It was good food.
Okay. We're going to be talking about some stuff.
I have a friend of my son is a child actor.
Oh.
Yeah, he's in commercials in Chicago, so you see him all the time.
Wow.
And it's a total experience for my 8-year-old to be like, that's the kid I go to school with.
Right, right.
And I'm like, we're not doing that.
And your son doesn't want to do it?
I don't think he does.
But he did.
We haven't been encouraging with it. Yeah. I mean, I have a whole, I could dust off my business plan for him. Like what I think would be the future of his life, but we're going to keep it right now just to go to school.
Yeah, how about just get to school?
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Jen, have a great show tonight.
Thank you.